from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the Good Atheist Podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Jeffrey Jones.
Ah, now, for this is going to be an interesting show for those of you that have been listening to the show for a very long time, and those of you that have been listening fairly recently.
I have no idea who the hell I am.
Who is this Jeffrey Jones? What's going on? And you may have heard of him sometimes mentioned in a number of forum posts that have been asking for you specifically by name, being like, where's Jeff? I'd like to hear Jeff on the show. Jeff.
That's cool.
So now they remember your name. I've said it like 8 or 9 times by now. So I think it's stuck in people's brains. And so we're gonna do a reintroduction of you. We're gonna summarize our friendship in in like 2 to 5 minutes. Can we do that?
Sure. I feel a little exploited.
We're going to monetize
your relationship.
That's what I do with all of my relationships.
I've noticed.
Don't you, like Carissa, who's soon to be my wife, is a co-host that I'm exploiting to do the show. I just need someone else to come on and accompany me. And yes, I'm an exploiter, sir.
That's all right. I can deal with it. I can manage the cruelness.
Well, you know, I think that you would say that over the years I have been more kind than mean. So I exploit, but I also reward.
Exploit. You're not necessarily being mean.
Yeah,
during the podcast, he will poke me with a hot, you know, cattle
poker
brand.
That's just because you're mine, and I must claim you with a hot cattle brand.
If you're gonna burn my ass, you gotta buy me dinner first.
All right, but can it be pizza? Because I'm really cheap.
I like pizza. I'm a cheap date.
There you go. All right, you heard it here,
folks. Any fans in Montreal? Cheap date.
So all you need, you buy him pizza, and you can brand him with a hot poker.
That's right. You can brand me with your hot poker.
Well, you know, that's the first thing that I think that people should, you know, either remember or be introduced to the fact
that you are
a gay man.
I'm your resident, queer
theist.
Correspondent.
Queer correspondent, yes. I actually like that better. You're
there
my
we go.
Queer
it
correspondent.
It sounds more professional. And it sounds like I wear a blazer while getting branded in my ass.
It's very true. Like, you're doing it, but there's a reason other than the fact that you're just whoring around, you know? Like, you're just...
Well, I don't actually whore around that much.
No?
You've
done that stage?
Not done that stage. For some reason, I had a 5-month relationship that actually ended like months ago, like more than 5 months ago, and it still kind of left my ego in the gutter.
Well, you know, you
like
have
my
to...
first. I think it was the first person I ever actually fell in love with.
So yes,
it's kind of
the first one
it's
always
rough.
Hurts
yeah,
the most,
yeah.
man. I mean, you went.
I mean,
through...
I've dated. I just mean like love, like actually. That emotional connection, and it's like
it to be stripped away.
Yeah, it's like I don't know. I don't necessarily want the like. I don't know. Sex is fun, but now that I realize what relationships have to offer, I'm like I'd rather have that.
Yes, that is definitely the drug that I would recommend to people that they hook themselves on, because the rest of it is it's so fleeting, right? That's the thing about sex. You're just like when it's over.
Yeah.
That's when, you know, you're not always super happy with everything that it transpired. You're just like,
Exactly. And unlike 90% of my sexual encounters, you can't just clear the cash.
So that's the first thing of note.
I have a really squeaky
you.
Chair, I should mention.
Yeah?
I hope it doesn't pick up on the mic.
Probably does. But, you know, everyone's going to have to put up with the fact that things are limited. Now, what you probably notice by the time you download this file, that this is a gigantic show. This is a huge show. We called it a pod... I can't even pronounce it.
It was a podstravaganza.
Podstravaganza.
I knew you were going to trip
on it. I know. Well, of course, you know me. And the reason we have a podstravaganza is because I wasn't able to, because I've been trying to get more on my schedule, but I totally missed Tuesday's deadline because of technical issues. And then I went Wednesday to record an emergency show, only realizing that because I'm leaving Montreal very soon, I'm actually trying to squeeze in as much friend time as possible. But with that, I thought, well, here's the exciting thing. Doing that is also because I exploit my friends. Recording podcasts. So I thought, why not just squeeze both shows together?
He considers this quality time.
That's right. We hung out. I came over.
We watched
show.
A third of a movie.
That's a third of a terrible movie, and then I just made you work.
Yeah, that's okay.
Well,
it's barely work, and apparently there are people out there who want to hear my voice. So I'm like, hey, okay.
They will be
shocked. I like attention.
They will be shocked. But you know what's great? I mean, I don't know if you went to the About Us page, but you're on there.
I noticed that because I got links to my website, downandout.ca.
Go visit it.
Go visit it. It's a webcomic. I use gradient fills.
Oh, my God. You do?
I do.
I used to use that when I had a dream of webcomic, but I don't want to do that no more. You know me in art. I have a hate relationship.
I'm not holding out that it's going to be a career, but I do enjoy drawing and telling the story and...
You enjoy drawing more than I do because I feel like I'm mostly done with that. I don't know why it's so tragic because once in a while I'll actually get back into it.
It's just I think it's the stumbling block that I had with art that I'm kind of learning to accept, and I think it's probably something that you haven't yet or don't want to, is that it's not necessary. It's okay for it to be a pastime. Like, I'd love it if it were a career, but it doesn't necessarily need to be a career, you know? To me, like, drawing is kind of like, you know, to some people, like, just singing in the shower. It's something you do. You don't worry about it, and it's fun, and you're done, and it's, you know?
I know, but I workify every aspect
of my life. Well, that's the thing. Is what you bring into, like, your friendships and stuff. I mean, I make jokes about it, but you bring that into everything. You always look at that weird, how can I make money off, or how can I... your phrase is, how can I monetize this? It's like, I swear, like, anything he... It's like, we'll be watching a movie, and like, you know what? We could do riff tracks to this and then sell them online. And I'm just like, I would love to, but can I hear the movie first?
It's so funny, too, that I'm so dirt poor, because I must think that I'm good, but I'm totally bad at...
Well, you have millions of dollars in idea money.
Yeah, which is
it's commendable, but it's like, unfortunately, you can't eat imaginary food.
I've been really trying.
I know, and I commend you for it. I mean, anybody who sort of goes all out and does that, I mean, it's pretty brave, but I like being able to do stuff.
I understand. You know what it is? Like, even now, because the thing about the Podstravaganza, I think I got that right?
Podstravaganza, yeah.
Thing about it, too, is that it's still in the midst of, you know, Save Good Atheist, let's get this puppy rolling again. And there's so many things that I could tell you are almost conflicting messages, right? Where there was a big decrease in terms of how many people visited the site after the 2 months where it just wasn't working, right?
Yeah.
There was a big decrease.
Well, that's the internet. That's just how the internet works.
Yeah, the internet will just kick you in the balls every once in a while. Right. And you realize that, you know, there was somebody who actually emailed me the other day asking how many fans of your podcast listen to the show. So I kind of gave him a number. Like, I told him roughly I put 4,000 plus on the site. I've decided that I'm going to break the rules. Most people, they don't show their podcast penis because they're normally very afraid of how low it is. But I'm like, no, I'm going to be as truthful as I can. And I put the number 4,000, even though it's really, really difficult to pay, you know, to estimate how many people pay attention to you.
It's just a ballpark.
It's a ballpark. It's based on two figures. It's based on how many people download the podcast in 1 week, plus how many people are actually subscribed to the RSS feed that don't listen to the show, because some people actually don't like the podcast. They like the grammatically troubled writing.
Okay.
That's what they like. So.
I didn't think that was the draw. That's like having pie for the crust.
I know, right? But some people really love crust.
Weird.
It is.
Well,
kind of
weird. Certainly are a crusty old man.
I think just in terms of the writing, maybe what those people like is I figured out the formula that I think most blogs should function is: don't make it too long, mm-hmm. 3 to 4 paragraphs, keep it fucking tight, and then just have some cool links. Like I still try to do a not shitty job, but
I
would
like
not
your writing. I'm just like, it's not the draw.
No, it isn't necessarily.
It's like you don't necessarily buy a DVD for the special features. You buy it for the movie.
You buy it for the movie, right? You're like, that's the big
you'll
product.
Watch,
that's what
if
I
you're bored,
sell.
you'll check the special stuff and the director's commentary. But
the aim of the site is really to be the check out more stuff.
Yeah,
is the angle, like, not just for me, but from, you know, a growing form. It grows slowly. I mean, I have to be honest. There's not everybody. People aren't trolling it on a day-to-day basis. We're still just trying to fucking grow amongst amidst the, you know, like the fact that there's still lots of people popping up, good competition, you know, podcasts out there that are just mm-hmm. doing as good a job as me fucking talking about atheism. So it's not like it used to be in the old days where you're like, I don't have anything to recommend you. You know, you're like, ah, if good atheists isn't around,
then
lots
there's
of
Thinking
other shows.
Atheist, there's, what was it, Invisible Friends was another one?
The Imaginary, Imaginary Friends Show. Friends. There's that, what's that other one there? Well, whoever's on the list of the about.com.
Oh, okay.
Which
yeah.
I totally dropped the ball on that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was, but I mean, stupid. That was, wow. Well,
that was the I want to quit month, though.
I want to quit month. But to be honest, you had a rocky year. Like 2011, you know, was a bit of a rocky year for you. The internet stuff in the Dominican, and like it like you were gone for a while.
It was. It's
and
true.
Like,
it's true.
So I mean, as much as I was like, you know, it really sucks that you're not on that. I was kind of like, I can kind of understand it.
Yeah. Well, I think for a lot of people, they thought, well, you know, we saw this coming from maybe a mile away. And it's not uncommon. Like, that's mm-hmm. the story of a lot of people who try mm-hmm. to do these types of projects. You kind of, you go through a stage where you're like, oh, we're really, you know, like you feel like you're popular. Mm-hmm. But anytime you reach your goal, yeah. it doesn't feel satisfying. Well, that's yeah. the weird thing about it. Like, you could set up your whole life to have this one goal and accomplish it and be like, I don't feel like I've done anything. Because yeah. you've already felt the accomplishment when you were fantasizing about it. So you don't have it anymore by the time it arrives.
Well, also, whatever you set the bar for, once you've achieved it, it doesn't matter how awesome it is. Eventually you'll want to raise the bar. It's like, I'm pretty sure sites like, just because I did live more in the world of like webcomics and stuff, like Penny Arcade as an example, like I'm sure they have an amazingly huge, ginormous fan base and tons of hits. But I bet they're like, man, I wish we could get more hits. You know what I mean? Like, I wish we yeah. had more traffic.
You know what it reminds me of, actually? It reminds me of Cher. Cher has this weird thing where Cher is worth probably about $900 million, but she has a weird
paranoia.
Yeah,
but that's her robot heart.
Okay, the robot that is Cher is worth $900 million, but she's paranoid about losing it all. It is literally impossible for that woman to be poor. Even if she lost everything MC Hammer style, it wouldn't matter. Like, someone would pay her 10,000 yeah. grand to just have a show, even if she was doing it in a wheelchair.
If she did a con, she would just have to do like a comeback concert. That's it. Like
her 10th one.
You're broke? Yeah. Okay. You know what? The Molson Center is open. Do they even have the Molson Center anymore? I don't even know. But anyways, concert hall is open.
Why Montreal? I would not gauge Montreal.
I live in, okay, fine. That concert hall in New York, I only know of the Bowery, and I don't even know if that's a big concert place.
I feel like I should start a new thing saying, can Jeff have some money to travel the world, because he only knows the Bell Center.
That's the Bell Center, is
that's
it?
What it is.
Oh, okay, there we go.
And he doesn't even know that.
I don't even know that.
He needs to travel a little.
I would love to. You know what, I would love to, this is gonna make me sound incredibly lame,
do it.
I want to go to I would love to go to New York.
That's not a big dream.
No, but it's a lame dream. That's what I'm saying. It's just, I would love to go to New York so I could see They Might Be Giants in concert in their hometown. Although they're kind of more Brooklyn, but well, Brooklyn's in New York.
So. Yeah, well, you want to go to Brooklyn. That's where
that's the artsy fartsy place.
It is the artsy fartsy place yeah. that they're trying to strangle away from a crazy Hasidic Jews.
That's
the honest truth. That's kind of like, no one really figured out why anyone would want to live in these pieces of shit houses. But then it turns out that the hipsters think that's cool. They like crappy. They find it yeah. comforting. They'll pay a lot of money for crappy.
Kraft dinner is awesome until your teeth fall out. <It's> like, congratulations.
Condition? I don't know if we might get sued by Kraft.
What?
Eat Kraft dinner and your teeth fall out.
Okay, with one, that would require Kraft to listen to this podcast.
Well, you know, corporations but are people. So
they might be people. That is true. But also, I should have probably said mac and cheese. It's just in Canada, it's called Kraft dinner. That's what we call it. You know,
I think they might have it actually in the U.S.
I thought it was just Kraft macaroni and cheese. I don't think they called it Kraft dinner.
It's true. I think, well, dinner means something a little bit different depending where you are, or if you're French or English. It's very confusing. For some people, dinner is like the fancy meal. So I don't think you want to associate the kind of thing you put in a microwave for 5 minutes with
microwavable powdered cheese. Yeah.
This is perhaps not the fancy dinner you had in mind.
Perhaps not. But it does apparently serve, what, 8? Like, bullshit.
If you feed them 8?
Was it 4 or 8
it's
servings?
It's 4
in a box?
On their servings. Yeah, 4 servings. if you serve it in with a glass, like
an, if it, with an ice cream scoop.
But that's because we're pigs, though. That's what we
I don't
are.
Think so, man. I can box a Kraft dinner with a can of tuna. It's delicious. It's delicious. Try
it. Now you really make me want to put up that Save Jeff from Kraft dinner and cans of tuna.
Well,
but some people are only now being introduced to you. So it's important.
So
they
know that I'm gay and potentially have no teeth. I like that. Although that's not entirely an unflattering combination.
Depending on the circles.
Hey, I will be invited to plenty of lemon parties, I'm going to tell you.
Well, you will be, yeah. You're the lemonade. That's
oh, yeah.
Finally, there someone who takes more pride in his work than his teeth.
I can only imagine the grim picture people have of me.
You know,
this is
now,
an awful first impression.
Yeah, and it doesn't help too that today we're going to be talking about a specific what I view as an advance in terms of the general gay rights movement. Mm. It doesn't help that we're talking about old men blowing each other.
No, we're
That's
talking
nice.
About me blowing old men.
Okay, well. That's true. You know what? If you
it's
did
different.
That, if you did that, then we actually wouldn't really need to do a whole kind of save Jeffrey Jones.
Exactly. I could get chartered jets to New York.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for those old closeted dudes that just could use
exactly.
a toothless Montrealer to suck on their old bones.
I got to Ted Haggard too late.
He's still available. What are you talking about? Ted Haggard is going to fucking... Do you think that he stopped fantasizing about dudes?
Look, he had a trial like Hercules.
His Herculean trial to stop fantasizing about muscular men. Because you see his taste in men, right?
He had to stop gobbling the Hydra.
I think he's really into the beef take.
It's a little too much. For me, I don't like those guys.
I was going to say,
it's too much.
Isn't it? I mean, and it gets worse. I can't imagine also sort of if you're not a beefsteak yourself and you're fucking a beefsteak, it must feel like you're fucking a cow.
It's beefcake.
Or whatever.
Beefsteak is French for
steak. Beefsteak is...
Beefsteak.
All right, whatever. You'll forgive me. I'm part French.
There
all right.
Go.
Even though it's completely not obvious. Except for in my
name. Except for your last name, Fortin.
You know what? I was thinking of having... a contest. Every time I have a new guest on, I'm going to ask them to pronounce my last name.
Okay.
And the one guest that gets it right, I'm going to do something special. Because I don't actually think that there's one person on this goddamn planet that can get my last name right.
Introduce yourself as Jacob Fortin all the time.
But no one outside of Quebec can actually say the word Tain.
Tain?
Yeah. They're like Tin.
Fortin?
They can't say Tain. Tain is a word that to them is as alien as Chinese.
Okay. I guess I because I don't get out much.
Think about how they pronounce Tintin, right?
Tintin?
Which is how he's supposed to be pronounced.
Tintin.
But
yeah.
You may know him as Tintin. Tintin is not his name.
No.
That is the name of a kind of metal
with
repeated
an echo.
Twice. Yeah. With an echo, yeah. Tintin, no idea what that is.
No.
And apparently, Tang
is
also
not two-thirds of a famous dog's name.
Is it?
Rin Tin Tin.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Rin Tin Tin is his real name, though.
Is it?
It is.
I didn't
is.
Know it was a French-Belgian dog.
It is.
I didn't know.
Yeah, that's right. It's kind of like Ratatouille. You can't say that in English.
Ratatouille.
I would dare any person to try to pronounce it that way. It seems at least to me, impossible. Certain vowels cannot be pronounced by the English people, and that's just how it is. That's just how it is. And I have to accept that I will forever be Jacob 14 or whatever, how it's fucking pronounced in every other place but this little region that I'm now leaving.
That's true. You're going to be leaving the only area that knows your name.
Yeah, the only area that can actually pronounce
now,
it properly.
From here
in
on in, you're Jacob Fortin.
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 Oh, yeah. In a place where Calgary is actually pretty damn hostile towards Quebecers. Doesn't even matter if you speak English.
Really?
They don't like Quebecers.
And you're moving there, why?
Well, my hot wife is from there.
Okay.
So we tried living here, and it was an awful experience.
But weren't you couch surfing, and it was winter?
No, well, the real problem actually was trying to find a place here, and it got really sketchy with a whole bunch of people. It threw us off in the whole experience. And
yeah, the landlords are fucking paranoid.
They've gotten worse.
Ugh.
I didn't know. I mean,
I fucking locked this place in. I'm not leaving. They will drag my corpse out of this house.
Well, you know,
I'm staying for at least another 2 months.
Well, it was actually kind of funny because when I tried to get a place,
oh, yeah,
they're paranoid. They called... their whole thing is like, oh, you're still on this person's lease and so, and you weren't honest. And it was the most, I don't think CSIS can do as competent a job of finding a person's history as they did.
But it didn't, when I talked to my landlord, just for a little backstory, like, I get home one day and he's on Skype and he's like, dude, my name is still on your lease, blah, blah. And I'm thinking someone's freaking stolen my identity or something, because I'm like, Jacob's never been on my lease.
Well, it was very long time ago. I was a co-signer.
You were just a reference. No, you weren't a co-signer. You were actually a co-signer?
Because here's the thing, where you live, I used to have this apartment, and basically,
it's incredibly crooked Asian landlord.
Right, who owned this place. So, and it was a pretty sweet place, and the entire time that I was living there, Jeff always had the same complaint, which is, I don't know why the previous people who had owned this place, who I knew, didn't give it to you, and instead gave it to me when I was shopping around for apartments, and you were quite miffed about that. Do you remember this?
Yes, because it was Matt and Izzy.
That's right.
Right.
And you were like, they knew that I had been looking for apartments for a while, and they had not mentioned you or whatever, and then I got the apartment, and you were reasonably miffed because it had two bedroom apartment for
the rent was amazing. The rent's still amazing.
In any city, it's quite amazing.
Yeah.
So when I moved out, I made sure Jeff could get my apartment. I actually didn't. Wasn't that the same year that you took over my job too?
No, it was the year after.
It was the year after.
I was still at. This is like internal chat, but anyway.
Whatever.
We were still
the bonus show, Pod Stravaganza. If they don't like it, I'm like, unsubscribe, fuckers. Like, this is a pledge drive.
I really do. You can't pronounce my name. Unsubscribe, you fuckers. I'm telling a story that no one but me and him get.
It's great. I mean,
donate button to the right, jackass.
I'm starting to realize that the people who listen to the show have extremely lengthy commutes. They're asking me to make the shows longer because they're desperate for content, these poor people that travel or work out and are bored out of their fucking trees, man. So whatever we're talking about. I'm background noise. Do you know how much no one remembers anything I say even?
Well, if they can't pronounce your name, clearly.
It's good, though, because I wanted to make a correction. Last episode, I mentioned the fact that I was a modern-day Stoic, and I accused the American educational system of failing to explain Greek philosophy. Ironically enough, I fucked that up. I'm not a Stoic, but rather a sophist who I had confused. So there you go. There's the irony right there. But I am a product of my education, so...
blame the education system.
I will, any opportunity I get. That's the best way to save face when you're wrong.
Also, there's a huge, big tuition hike in Quebec, everybody in Quebec will just blame the education system anyway.
That's true.
Like, so you're fine. It's like, yeah, damn them. Grève.
You can be negative about being educated now. That's the new thing.
Yeah. It's hip to be jaded.
I feel hip then because I'm jaded about everything.
I complain about everything. I'm like, God.
Everything sucks.
Yeah, everything's just the worst.
Isn't it, though?
It is. God.
I feel like we're in the new generation of everything's bad, and I feel it.
I really think we're the epitome of, like, middle-class problem. Like, white guy problems. Like,
so much.
Oh, my God, my data's been... My internet's been capped. Oh, no.
This is an
outrage. I only have the Diet Snapple.
My world of almost infinite ways to please my desires is not constantly available.
Yeah, seriously.
To take even running water for granted is a very recent human phenomenon, and I will admit that I don't quite know how to deal with that.
I think it's not cold enough.
Is that the problem?
You want
an ice age, is what you want.
No, the water isn't cold enough.
That's your big problem? It's never cold enough.
With the running water?
That's weird that it would never be cold enough.
I like really cold water.
But you live in Canada. The pipe should be cold all the time for no reason.
No, not cold enough. Like drinking cold. Like, okay, if
you've heard of ice cubes.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you gotta wait for an ice cube to cool off the glass.
This is why we were gifted with the ability to think ahead and be like, I'm gonna go to bed. But tomorrow, I can have a whole day's worth of ice cubes if I put the water
in. Yes, I can have
a
whole day's worth of ice cubes. But when you put the ice cube in the glass, it's not like freaking that woman's face in Jason X that got immediately frozen in the liquid nitrogen.
Do you know what the trick is?
Put it in and wait?
No. You mix it around.
Oh, so much work. I gotta clean a spoon.
You could use your finger, you fucking lazy bastard.
Hey, look, this is going to sound incredibly ironic coming from what I just said at the beginning, but I do not like having sticky shit all over my hands, and Kool-Aid syrup and lemonade is disgusting. I would have to wash my hands.
So, you actually don't like the Santorum?
Not on my hands. Who likes Santorum? That is an awesome bumper sticker, by the way.
Who likes Santorum?
Yeah, but it would just be like a white bumper sticker with like kind of this weird translucent brown splotch in the top corner.
Mm. I gotta tell you, probably some people.
I would not imagine. Dude, having accidentally tasted lube on several occasions, it's not good. And I can't imagine, it's like, shit is not the bacon bits of body parts. I don't imagine that being a taste sensation.
Really?
It's
no.
not. I,
yeah.
This has nothing to do with atheism, other than the proof that there is no God.
Definitely in the speech that you're saying. I really love how we're the filthiest atheist podcast. I think this is pretty clear.
I think I'm definitely not helping you too much on this one.
That's good, though.
I'm filthy.
If you read the bios, your shows are supposed to be the ones that are completely disjointed, but the most fun.
Okay, I just.
You did read the bio thing.
I did read the bio. Yeah. I was wondering where you got that photo of me. I'm assuming it was off of my Facebook.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was the only one. Honestly, if you have a nicer one, I'll take it, because it seems a little bit crazy in the color department.
Well,
I'll keep it.
No, it's a fine photo of me. I don't take photos of myself.
It just makes us look. The About Us page makes us look like a fun gang.
We are
a fun gang. We are definitely a fun gang.
We are. We invite any of you to play with us on Steam and or Xbox Live.
Well, hopefully in the next few weeks, there's going to be much better games than there exists now for that.
That's true.
And I'm looking forward to being able to actually afford games where that will happen. And I'm telling you right now, there's at least half a dozen people that have expressed interest in doing that. We could seriously have an awesome, good atheist gaming community. It won't be huge, but I think it will be mega fun.
I'm just saying, Mindjack is like $10 now.
Mindjack?
It's an awful game. I'll have to show it to you after.
Yeah?
I'll show it after. At the half hour mark. We haven't talked anything.
Yeah, I know. Well, on the show, what we're actually supposed to be talking about, and I don't even know if we'll get to this topic other than to mention it briefly, but this is
we can talk about it. Yeah.
Well, we will talk about it.
Okay.
Is a very, very controversial study that was released about, gay therapy by a very, very prestigious psychiatrist in 2001 has, by that very same man, been repudiated. And honestly, this is, as far as you're looking in terms of gay rights and the movement in general, this is probably that last bit of credible, and I mean, I say this in quotation marks, which you can see, credible sources that people were still trying to rely on for this bullshit gay to straight therapy that is still happening in so many places. It makes me want to fucking
weep. This is something that I think everybody who's not fueled by some kind of weird religious calling to not mind their fucking business is still, like, I think they're the only ones who are interested in it. And you know what? I compare this news to, do you remember the whole vaccine autism thing? I mean, of course you do.
Andrew Wakefield.
That Lancet article, and then he renounced it. It's like, I think it's going to have the same impact. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to be like, it's discredited, it's bullshit.
Yeah.
But there's still going to be people that believe it.
Oh, well, you know what? Here's the deal, though. You have to take, you have to take the long view when it comes to this particular thing. Because obviously, look, if I was to tell you, how's the war going? How is the war going, in terms of trying to get gay people to have the same status as straight people in society? And not even just gay people, also transgendered. I don't know if most of you know this, Miss Universe Canada, a transgendered individual who at first had been denied and then reinstated. One of the things that I wrote about on the site, which some of you might like. But anyways, one of the things that I wrote about is that this is a significant moment for transgendered individuals. And it's important that they have their own moment, because even within the gay and lesbian community, they are the fucking outcasts.
It's one of those things that I find kind of annoying about the gay community is its treatment of transgender.
Dude, I was watching an old episode of Kids in the Hall. And yeah. Kids in the Hall was one of the pioneering
pretty
shows.
Fucking progressive.
Oh my
time.
Fucking God.
Time?
Steps. That was Buddy, one of their Buddy Cole. Cole. And yeah. There were so many just moments where the Scott sexuality was part of the show.
Yeah. And honestly, Scott Thompson was
a gay hero in Canada.
Oh yeah, no, I think he's a gay hero all around now.
You know what? I got to tell you this. Of and this is sort of a tangent. Of all the kids in the hall, he looked the ugliest as a woman, but the most handsome as a man when he had a mustache. It only worked when he had a mustache.
I always
Danny with a mustache would look like he, you know what he looked like? He looked like the lead singer of Queen, Freddie Mercury.
Freddie Mercury is not an attractive man.
I liked him with a mustache though. Okay. I thought he was a cool gay icon for the time. That was handsome back then. You got to put yourself in the time, man.
I do not.
You got to. He was the George Clooney of the mustache men. That was
I didn't grow up in the early 80s like as a hormonal teen, so I don't know. Maybe we'll leave it up to the peanut gallery or the forums.
That's true.
Exactly.
We should talk.
Freddie Mercury, stud or dud?
Ooh, but, I kind of like that as a form to have it.
I would like to know, for people who grew up in that era, if he was considered an attractive man.
That is a good question. So you don't like him? You don't think he was attractive?
Freddie Mercury?
Yeah.
No, he's a little goblin man. And fucking amazing singer, though.
He was amazing.
Fuck, that guy can... like.
Who can follow his act?
Nobody. You can't.
You can't sing a Queen song.
I know
you can't do it.
Queen is still around, but I mean, with him gone, I'm like...
I don't know anybody with that motherfucking range.
No.
I just
It's not happening. If you're hearing that, this is because we're recording it at my house, and I have a cat that's like 10 times as annoying as Ryan's cat.
Open the fucking thing. Is he going to meow?
He's
going to
meow, and he's going to jump on my lap, and then that's going to be a problem.
Well, what are we supposed to do? He's going to meow the whole time.
All right. Hold on, everybody.
Go get the cat. Go get him.
This is what your bonus dollars are paying for, ladies and gentlemen.
No, no. This is a free show. Remember, this is the Podstravaganza. So much of it...
I'm rehearsing that word.
Podstravaganza. Well, I mean, you got to remember, I have to put that in the description of the show.
It's a good phrase.
Yeah. We'll probably have more of them because the truth is, mm-hmm. I seem to have more success even when I do the bonus shows if I give out as much as possible. The truth of the matter is that people feel more generous when I'm being generous. If that makes any fucking sense.
It's the gift of the magic.
I don't know how much I want to lock away. Like, I always feel conflicted. I'm like, do the people who pay for bonus shows feel betrayed if I give out a lot of it, trying to encourage other people to become bonus members?
Couldn't you just have, like, couldn't you just have ads?
No.
It's just not enough?
You just can't.
You can't? No.
Even though we have an impressive amount of downloads, there's just nobody that's going to pay for ads. Honestly, and I've approached secular organization, mm-hmm. and you know the money's not there. Last show there was a fan who asked, "Are there secular scholarships that are available?"
Oh, I heard that one because of she was going to a Christian university.
That's right. Yeah,
I have to say,
don't
I was
go there.
Listening to that, and I'm just like.
Please
I don't want to tell you how to run your life. It's probably none of my business, but oh my God, this is a mistake.
Imagine how I felt because I'm like, well, if I tell you that and all of a sudden I'm like, oh no, the secular community is going to be there to support you. Look, the biggest scholarship you're going to get in an essay writing contest is $2,000.
That
doesn't get you fucking anywhere.
That'll get you a textbook.
Truth be told, there still isn't quite enough. I mean, they're fledgling, but it's all... It's just peanuts. It is fucking peanuts.
But it's kind of a microcosm for the rest of the world. It's just like the religious worldview is so much more supported financially.
Look, when the Mormon church itself is worth $30 to $40 billion.
Yeah, that's not right.
You know, and the Vatican, the Catholic Church is maybe $50 to $80 billion and then more. And this is money that accrues, okay? Anyone that has a lot of money just gets more money every year.
You sit on it. You live off the interest.
Sit on it.
But it's like, I know there's an internet meme, but it's just food for thought anyway. Was the whole, like, what was it if churches were actually taxed? Like, each family would average $1,000
less
a year.
Yeah, less
I don't know how accurate that is. It's worth researching.
Well, let me give,
like,
you an example.
I could see that.
Let me give you an example. In Italy, they were talking about finally charging the Catholic Church just for its property.
Mm-hmm.
And they estimate being able to take about $300
million. $300 million?
A year.
$300 million.
In taxes that are not being paid by the church. I'm like... Those are being paid by citizens.
That is such a free ride.
Hello? Yeah.
It drives me nuts. That is one of the things that fucking drives me nuts.
Religion's not free. The whole thing about them being tax exempt is something that should just finally fade. Yeah. There's no reason to believe that that makes religion any more free. If anything, it makes us all pay for it. And yeah. I'm like, I don't want to pay for religion anymore. Why don't you fuck off?
I don't want to pay for organizations to preach their hatred of me.
I mean, how many times, I don't know if you paid attention to this, when I put up links to Bradley Dean guy.
Which one's Bradley Dean?
He's the you can run, but you can't hide international with his homophobic fucking messages.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I had gotten a link to that on my website a couple days before you had sent me that link. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The guy who did the preaching about...
My war against the homosexual agenda.
What agenda? Okay, I've talked to my gay friends. I have no other than be left the fuck alone.
Try to find a nice guy that I can settle down with.
Exactly. It's like, you know what? Here's the gay agenda. Is like, have a normal life and not have to waste my days worrying that, you know, oh my god, some guy gives a crap about who I'm sleeping with.
I just want somebody to love is the gay agenda. So I guess that's a big problem for guys like Bradley Dean, but he gets a lot of his funding from these abstinence programs because that's what he sells himself as, and just like, well, I can include all this stuff about gay, or like how Elton John is evil.
Yeah, Elton John. Yeah. Well, didn't he say something about like, so he draws the line at sex with goats?
No. Elton John is a good human being.
I'm like, come on.
You can't find a lot to fault about Elton John other than the fact that he stole his name from someone else.
Yeah, yeah, it was one of his. His original name is Reginald Dwight.
Not a cool name. Elton John is an awesome name.
Elton John is an awesome name. Yeah.
If you could have any name, what would it be?
I like Jeffrey Adams. I would love to change my last name.
You could marry Carlos, our friend.
I think he's straight.
He may like the benefits of being married. Then you could just keep his name.
Or I could just legally change my name.
That's true. But I kind of like your last names, other than the fact that it's associated with a cult leader.
That's James Jones. That's my brother.
Jim Jones.
Jim Jones, yeah. That's my brother.
That's what I said. The last name is associated with
him. But Jeffrey Jones is that actor from the 90s.
Pedophile guy.
From the actor child pornographer.
Yeah, you may remember him from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Or Beetlejuice, or any John
Or Howard the Duck. No, you don't remember anyone from Howard the Duck.
Gina Davis was in Howard the Duck, wasn't she?
Yeah, also...
actually, who remembers
Tim
Gina
Robbins
Davis?
was in there. I think there were actually a few Academy Award winners in that horrible movie.
That, how did they get away from that blast radius? Like, that's what I want to know.
No, who was the main girl? It was the chick from Caroline in the City. The really skinny girl from Back to the Future. She was,
you know,
the
I've
girl.
Never finished watching the Back to the Future movies.
What's wrong with you?
They're boring.
Here's a call out for anyone who's in the West Coast is that on November 15th or November 12th, I think, 2015, I'm going to hold an awesome Back to the Future motherfucking party, because that's when Marty McFly comes back to the future, I believe. Anyways, whatever
it
date that
like
is.
You're preparing for the rapture.
Well, it's my
Marty
version.
McFly Day!
It's my version of it, and plus there's going to be like a costume fucking contest, so you have to come dressed as any of the period pieces of the movie. It's going to be awesome.
That's
I've already started planning for it. A Back to the Future party is going to happen.
Can I come as Huey Lewis?
Yes. Yes, you can. And here's the deal. There's even talk, because Pepsi does special orders, we might be able to get the Pepsi bottles from the fucking second movie.
That's pretty cool.
Shit you not.
That's
so
pretty cool.
That could be awesome.
Well, you got
look
like 3 years
and
to...
You have 3 years to plan for it. But
I can probably watch them by then.
I think you should.
The thing is without the nostalgia, they're just old movies. You know what I mean?
I know, but I gotta
like,
tell you.
I tried to appreciate them, but I'm just like, this is... I don't have the... It's, you know, it would be like trying to get someone to watch Ghostbusters now. I don't think they'd enjoy it. I think they get too caught up on, like, how crappy Zool looks.
Well, I've actually been wondering, what is the kind of next generation that's used to much more sophisticated and slick types of movies? How would they react to the old stuff? And I think it's kind of the same way that... Can you appreciate a black and white movie, even despite the fact that you haven't seen it? I can't. A lot of times I can't.
I can. There are certain movies that I can.
Some I can, but a lot I cannot.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of old movies I'm just like, nothing's happening.
I'm kind of partial to Hitchcock, though, but that's, like, because I took a Hitchcock class in college, which just doesn't even sound like it should be a course, but it was.
I think it's a worthwhile course.
And so, like, whenever I get a chance to watch Hitchcock, I always do because I love watching his movies. Even the really old spy stuff that he did.
Spy stuff?
All his old movies.
Well, I guess North by Northwest is a spy movie, huh?
Well, North by Northwest is a later Hitchcock movie. I'm talking about his early stuff, like The 39 Steps and The Lady Vanishes and Strangers on a Train and all that stuff.
Well, Strangers on a Train is not really a spy movie. It's more like
it's
more like Murder the Your Wife movie.
It's the serious version of Throw Mama from the Train.
Throw Mama from the Train.
Wrong.
I kind of wonder if there's, I think there will probably be a resurgence, maybe one more generation where they go back and for nostalgia's sake, look at those old movies because I don't want to sound like an old fogey, but the big difference about movies, the way that movies used to be made and the way that they're made now is that
right.
Movie making is very much, it's the whole process seems to take the whole humanity and movie magic out of it now. It's just anesthetized is what it is.
Well, this is something that, and I've had conversations about this with one of my friends often, is there is something about prosthetics and corn syrup blood and rubber and
maquettes,
latex. Maquettes, matte
paintings.
Yeah, you can't duplicate that on CG. CG is just too sterile. You know what I mean?
Well, here's what I mean. Like my whole argument about movie magic is a good example that I love to quote is one of my favorite romantic comedies, which is When Harry Met Sally. Now, if you've ever watched that, there's a scene where they're in a cafe and Meg Ryan fakes an
orgasm.
Yeah, and then that one woman who says, "I'll have what she's having." Now, that entire scene, when you actually research the movie, is all kind of like, first of all, it was Meg Ryan's idea to just have a cafe scene.
Right.
It was Billy Crystal's idea to, like, well, Meg Ryan's idea to have, like, the whole fake orgasm. Billy Crystal's idea to include someone that said, "I'll have what she's having," is a great way to fucking finish
that
scene.
Yeah.
And the woman that says that is actually
Billy
Crystal's
mother. Yeah, there we go.
You know, like, the movie magic for me is just when everyone agrees, when the actors, the writer, and the director are people that have all worked together.
Mm-hmm.
They've decided they're going to craft something all in one, like, tightly knit group. But everyone is having a say into how it's going to go. And something great happens, and movie fucking history is made.
Right.
Now, that doesn't happen now because decisions are made almost entirily
by committee. Yeah.
No one is willing to take a chance on anything, and the creative process has been fucking curtailed because it's the movie industry and it's not the movie art anymore. It's become a business the same way that you manufacture a car.
Yeah, or music. All by numbers now. That's kind of sad.
But that's the mainstream way. And you know what? Luckily enough, we live in a world in which the independents are starting to kind of catch up in terms of their quality.
Yeah, but even in terms of music, you can make some pretty great music with, like, you know,
with a low budget.
With a low budget. Yeah. But movies still, I mean, even if you're just making in terms of older quality stuff, like, it costs money.
Well, let me give you an example of a movie that did really
well. Kickstarter seems like a good idea.
It does
for
seem
that.
Like. Well, yeah. Here's the great thing about Kickstarter, because I mean, eventually, in a couple of maybe in 2 months, because I'm trying to delay it because I'm trying to understand Kickstarter a little bit better before I do my own thing on it. But one of the great things that I feel about Kickstarter is, this is going to sound like my fucking conspiracy theorist, but we have to get away from the world that is determined by the financiers, by the individuals that have money. The money lenders of the world now are not people that you want to be beholden to. The Visas, the fucking International Monetary Fund or the World Bank are not looking after people's best interest. But in the world of Kickstarter or Indiegogo, where the financiers of the world can be 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 people that have little money but, you know, like a stake themselves in seeing a project come through. This is a very different world, you know? The financiers now are us if we really want to and if we're organized and slick enough in the way we present it.
Yeah.
And that's an exciting future where I'm not beholden to the fucking capitalists of the world and to their motherfucking rules. I can just say, here's my project, here's how much money I have, and the rest of it is up to me to
like, I'll
galvanize
figure it out.
People.
Yeah.
And that's fucking exciting.
That's one of the great things that's happening with the internet, or that's happened with the internet. I worry that a lot of that's going to try to get controlled, though, you know?
I do admit like that I always fear I fear that part, like, but I think that like imagine this. Imagine the internet is a road, and you worry that some entity is going to try to create an endless amount of tolls,
yeah,
and no one's going to use that road anymore. Mm-hmm. But we live in a world where the technological sophistication is high enough from individuals, independent individuals, that I think that perhaps not as good a network, but a free internet could pop up if it became the most stifling, freedom curtailing fucking place in the world.
That's, I think, what would end up happening is, and I've talked to some of my tech friends about that, is just basically, if the internet becomes like this controlled environment a la AOL in the 90s, there'll just be another internet that everybody else will, it'll become like the Usenet.
The truth is the internet is more of an idea than it is necessarily a technology. Mm-hmm. And once you tap into the idea, the ability for any individual to communicate with any other individual on this planet and doing so much more efficiently. Like, think about this. You can go to a website and get it translated now. That's fucked up.
That's awesome, yeah. Remember when it was just Babelfish and it was, like, really bad?
Yeah, I remember those days.
Like, you could tell when someone translated a term paper because the sentence structure was so broken.
But it was a sign of things to come. Mm-hmm. But I only imagine, like, in 10 to 15 years, the ability for us to communicate with any other human on this planet is going to be even more powerful because we feel that need. We're almost like the Borg in that way, I feel. We want
Once we get those Google glasses, anyway.
Well, we definitely will be a little bit closer. Yeah. I'm like, I don't need this eyeball. Can you just put this Google glass in my eye? Yeah.
I'm still kind of terrified of that, but at the same time, I'm like, I need a new pair of glasses. They don't look so bad. I gotta wear them. Slick. Can I get can I get prescription Google glasses that just have like the lens, like prescription lens?
Even tempt me, dude. Don't say that because now I want one. You've actually implanted the idea in my brain. Now I want one. That's
right. Thank you, Google, or you're welcome, Google, depending on where the money's going.
Like, and you know what? Here, maybe because this is such a disjointed podcast, maybe this is a good time for me to present this idea that I've been teasing about it for a long time, and the reason why I haven't really talked about it much is because it's an unformulated Jacob idea. And I think that we all know that means.
You need like a cool segue, like tone, like
burp, yeah, burp, burp. Like almost like when Jerry Springer used to do his end thing.
Oh God,
where he was trying to moralize everyone.
Yeah, like, it was final thought.
Final thought. Let Jerry Springer, the great purveyor of human misery, give you a little 5-minute lesson.
Morally guide you. Yeah,
moralize your ass. But yeah, I wanted to kind of give a final thought thing about human beings. Is the one thing I'm kind of realizing about humans. There's two fundamental things. Number one is that we're not creative, we're mimickers. We will steal everything we see. If a bird flies, we want to fly. If a fucking octopus shoots ink out of its fucking thing, we want to shoot ink out of our thing. I'm just saying, like, we have this tendency to look at everything.
I appreciate that.
Well, no, maybe not. But we want to live in a world in which everything that we think is cool, that another creature does, we want to do.
Right.
And I feel like that's kind of like, that is part of our defining characteristic. But do something about your cat. Go grab your cat. He's annoying me.
All right.
Punch him in the face.
I won't be punching my cat. This is what I put up with every day, by the way.
See, this is because you've actually... you should wean your cat off to affection. That's what you should do.
Why would
you
I
need
do
to
that?
Punish him off on that.
You can't punish cats?
Oh, yeah.
What? Yes, I'm going to go beat my cat.
I didn't say beat. I said a series of carefully placed electrical shocks.
That's not what you said. You said
in
that
gonad areas.
Yeah. See, the problem with disciplining cats. This is total. Well, this is the Cat Fancy podcast. Apparently,
whatever
is that any form of attention, good or bad, is fine by them. It seems, as long as you're paying attention. That's why, like, if a cat meows at the door, you're not supposed to open the door and be like, "Shut the hell up," because like, yeah, I got your attention. That's all I wanted.
What a strange desire these creatures have.
Yeah.
I wanted to annoy you, and I got what I wanted.
Exactly. Now I'll do it again. Stronger and more fervent than before. So anyways, you were talking about Jerry Springer and his octopus squirty thing.
Yes. The thing that I was going to end, the second thing about human beings, and the part that of my untested theory that's still in my head that I keep mentioning every once in a while, is this idea that once you make... like, once you're able to actually craft an original idea, because I think that every once in a while we'll actually come across that. Maybe it's an accident. I don't know. But every once in a while we remix an idea and come up with something original and new. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while when we do that and we kind of create this artificial desire for something that never existed, this I call myth-making. In religions, they normally refer to that as sort of prophecy. Like, there's a certain fraction of all religion that is concerned with trying to predict the future. And the act of predicting the future is not so much to predict it, but to control it. Have you noticed? I mean, you're an RPG man. Have you noticed that they always use that old trope that there's some kind of prophecy and you have to fulfill it?
Destiny, it's destiny. Your destiny. You're the chosen one.
Right.
You have the hero genes.
Right. But the reason why they do this is because you can't actually have a story where anyone's trying to accomplish anything if you don't give them this idea that they're supposed to head towards a particular path.
Well, you need an endgame eventually.
Right. You need an ending to even a person's life, or at least. I don't want to say purpose, because that might not be the correct word, and it's totally
loaded. Well,
even
a concept has a destination. Like, the destination is the concept, is having that concept, achieving it.
And this I call myth-making. And in a way, like, myth-making can take a lot of different forms. I mean, one of the most exciting things that probably most fans of the site will testify to loving is science fiction. And science fiction is a way of myth-making. And if you look at the way that we have evolved as a species and as a society, and you think about the weird myths that we created about the future, we're trying to live these myths. We established those ourselves because there was a part of it that was desirable. And once we created that desire, there was inevitably a certain group of humans that were like, I will fulfill this desire that this just created at whatever cost.
Case in point, when you mentioned your Back to the Future 2015 thing,
mm-hmm.
I will bet money that there was someone in the listening area that was like, I hope we do have those hover skateboards by then, like those hoverboards.
Well, you know, it was a big thing right when
and
they
the
released the movie.
Shoes.
They still get emails about where's the hoverboard. And truth of the matter is, you can finally actually invent the hoverboard. There is enough technological understanding. It's not practical though. But if you've ever heard of quantum levitation,
right?
You do know that we are just that much closer with quantum levitation of having that stupid hoverboard that would really be just completely useless. I mean, it's dumb. Just use wheels. Like,
it
there's no reason for you to hover.
Cool.
Right.
I want to look cool, Jacob.
What a strange human impulse, but ultimately a very formative one, don't you think?
Fashion over form happens way more. Form over function is probably more what I wanted to say.
I do think, though, that part of the myth making is also when we look at the image of ourselves, it's not just crafting the myth in terms of what is the ideal human being or what is that experience. It's also like many subtle things like what is the concept of beauty? And we participate in that kind of myth-making quite a bit. And unfortunately, it tends to have an Indo-European kind of centric right now. You know, tends white, skinny.
Yeah.
These tend to be the standards of beauty. But this is an example of myth-making as well, and for good or for bad, you know? Like, if you're not part of that group, which is the majority of the world, and you don't fall within that circle, then...
you've got yourself an eating disorder.
That's what you have. Horrible, horrible eating disorder.
Yeah.
Yep. And let's remember that even in that myth-making, even the way that we craft beauty, we create an impossibility. We use Photoshop to fucking tear away cellulite and remove and create impossible figures that can't actually exist in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the standards of beauty that we set for ourselves. And what is that? And I got to tell you that the purpose, the act of myth-making does not guarantee that you're going to have a more prosperous and wonderful society. It really depends on what that myth itself is. What it is you create.
I think don't get me started on society. you want to hear a crotchety old man, you get me started on society. Maybe that'll be another podcast where I just curmudgeon Jeff comes in and like get
well,
the...
Speaking of that, maybe we should actually just, you know, move to the one subject that I said we would promise to talk about.
We're an hour into the podcast, I think we should.
We probably should.
Probably should. For the one person still listening.
This is a pretty fresh bit of news, and I'm sure that there's going to be lots of fallout, but I thought that it would be interesting for us to talk about, especially seeing as how I can exploit the fact that you're my gay correspondent.
I'm your token gay friend.
And an important bit of news, like, in the world of... In the new civil rights movement, the quest for equality...
Right.
One of the major stepping stones that we have to cross is this idea that homosexual feelings is something that you can apparently get over.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen and heard about this in gay to straight therapies, mm-hmm. that have been time and time again condemned by reputable psychiatric organizations.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem that we have is that still reputable individuals that are psychiatrists have bought into this idea that homosexuality is just
a disorder,
perhaps a choice, or who knows what. Mm. And this there's a very famous psychiatrist that we're going to be talking about. His name is Dr. Robert Spitzer.
We talked about him briefly.
We briefly mentioned him, but because the podcast is so disjointed, so out of it, we have to mention
just
him
bring
again.
Bring him back. Okay. So this is not an error, sir.
Yeah, and I want to mention it very, you know, be very clear that this is a reputable psychiatrist. He was one of the people that actually redefined what we consider to be mental disorders, and one of the people in the 1970s to actually remove homosexual feelings from that definition.
The DSM there?
Yeah. So
okay.
This is not someone who is unfamiliar with some elements of the gay rights movement has probably crossed this man more than once.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't sound like he had a specific agenda per se.
No. Well, this is the portion of the study that seemed to be so problematic. So what happened in 2001? Basically, he released a controversial paper called "Can Some Gay Men and Lesbians Change Their Sexual Orientation?" And what he had done is basically a series of 45-minute interviews with about 200 people, and he asked them a series of questions, and some of the questions included, and some of the people had been individuals who claimed to have had homosexual feelings and had now been in heterosexual relationships. So the people that he was studying were individuals that had claimed that they were able to get over these feelings.
Okay, right.
Right. Now, here's the problem with the study that obviously throw the whole thing into question. The kinds of people that they got had been referred to by organizations that were already invested in trying to convert people, including the the National Association of Research and Therapy of Homosexuals. Yeah, that's the big one. And they had provided almost 43% of the people that he had talked to.
But that's such a, like, as a psychologist, wouldn't he have seen that as a skewed sample? Like, that's clearly filtered, like, you know, study.
Well, this is probably, you know, like, I think that any person who ever does a study is going to have to admit that they may not be entirely aware of their own biases when they come into it. And while there might be something of merit in the study, because I think to myself that there may be a very statistically insignificant but still present portion of the population who have a much more plastic version of their sexual identity. You know, the real bi's. Not the people that pretend just because it's cool or trendy, but individuals that actually, sure, they can fluctuate in terms of their sexual orientation because maybe they fall within the middle.
Yeah.
But this kind of thing has been overrepresented by these sort of gay to straight therapies as using these limited samples of being, this is something that is a choice, that something that you can talk yourself out of, apparently, or as long as you have I'm using air quotes here, healthy heterosexual relationships, then you're fine.
Yeah, wasn't one of their studies like, had sex at least once a month? That's not a healthy heterosexual relationship.
Yeah, or finally described not having had gay sexual thoughts during intercourse, which I'm sure they should be very proud of.
Yeah.
Like, well, that one time I banged my wife,
I was thinking about my wife.
It's amazing. I actually came inside of her not having to fantasize about gay men.
Exactly.
I felt very proud that moment.
I'd never felt so strong and greasy and
so manly before.
So sensual and musky. Wait, what?
So here's the exciting news. Just I think yesterday.
Yeah.
He has since repudiated that study and has finally admitted in retrospect that the critiques of the work, mainly saying that you chose a very limited samples based on interviews with people that were probably not being very honest.
Yeah.
And you know, this is all anecdotal shit. Like, have you really done anything other than an interview? That's not science, buddy.
That's not a study. That's just a questionnaire.
That's pretty much a fucking questionnaire. And
it's a Cosmo quiz.
And probably loaded with this idea, this preconceived notion that he had that heterosexual relationships are more healthy than homosexual relationships. That is a giant problem.
Was that the actual, what was the question, like the legit, like the actual, we don't have a list of the questions.
We don't have a list of the question, but some of them included, like, how many times did you have heterosexual sex? You know, even in that very question, the very fact that they're actually delineating what kind of sex you're having shows the obvious prejudice of it. It's like, I don't care what kind you're having, gay or straight.
Sex is sex.
Are you just having sex? And are you finding it pleasurable? And do you have any horrible feelings of guilt right after, or feeling that you did something wrong? And you know, like, the truth of the matter is that people who do studies and ask questionnaires like that, they have to understand that people are not necessarily truthful when they answer studies.
Well, it's that whole, like with the religious questionnaires where people just put, yeah, I'm Christian because that's what my
It's
dad
just
is.
Easier.
Yeah. I don't want to make a big deal out of it.
Right. And or this is just what I've been told to say, or somebody else is in the room with me and I don't necessarily want to be honest, or even if they're honest.
Or this gets me off the phone faster.
Or even if they're honest, like, how many times have you just, you know, not even been aware of your own fucking feelings?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I used to define myself as a Protestant just because my mom was Protestant. It was like, I was Protestant in the same way I was Canadian. I was just born into it, and that's the way I was.
So, yeah, when there's not much thought involved, or when you're just functioning on autopilot.
Yeah. I always find it kind of, not to sidetrack too much, but I always found it really kind of hilarious that most people spend more time choosing a toothpaste than a religion. Like, they'll actually...
That's true.
You know, it's like, this is a huge decision on how you're going to live your life, and you decide it once and for all. Like, obviously, exceptions, but you decide it once and for all when you're, what, 10? You know, like...
It's not just that, too. It's kind of like... I think that the reason people most do that is a good indicator of the fact that religion is not actually as important as everybody always claims it is. Like, if push came to shove, I think you'd find maybe 15 to 20% of people that would really care about religion, and everyone else is just phoning it in to make you happy.
Yeah, I think that's probably, like, the majority of... I'm going to have to use Christians because that's
what we know.
The milieu I grew up in.
Yeah.
The majority of them just know, yeah, Jesus died for my sins, and that's all it takes for me to be a Christian. So, yeah, I'm okay with that. I'm like, well...
Yeah, the push comes to shove. You're like, this is not a powerful religious experience that people talk about. These are the minority.
Yeah.
And the people that do, I've always been slightly suspicious about that, because you'll find that most people that talk about the rapture of their own religion often find themselves on the complete opposite end, where they're like, oh, I'm not feeling it now, and I'm really depressed, I'm having a crisis of faith. Like, the hard believers are probably also the hard skeptics, because they expect, they have an anticipation of how it's supposed to feel all the time. Mm-hmm. And even the faithful will always talk about moments of doubt, because why wouldn't you doubt when, you know, Mr. Invisible... He's not shown up.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's like, how many, the big one being Mother Teresa, but how many spokespeople of religion turned out to be atheists? It's like, just, you know, it's like, it became a job.
And I even have to imagine that in intellectual circles, that there are probably many people so invested in it that just, you know, not willing to come out and say, well, I don't really believe, but I think that the idea is beautiful. Or they have some other fucking justification.
Like, there's some great poetry in it. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, that really justifies the violence, the homophobia, the misogyny.
The misogyny, yeah.
Absolutely. We need it to be moral.
Yeah.
We need that.
Well, what's the argument that atheists just borrow their morality from Christianity? It's like, well, just take the rules, but we don't have to follow everything. I'm like,
Well, you know, if they want to make that accusation, and the hilarious thing about Christians is that there's a very good reason why they start Jesus' birth at year zero. Because as far as they're concerned, they didn't see history as a very important thing. That's why they birthed the Library of Alexandria, because they're like, fuck history. Jesus is going to come back, and it's the end of the world. Why should we care about the past? It's year zero day now.
Running up in intellectual credit card debt because you're dying.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. I mean, it's kind of like that whole impetus in the States where people feel entitled to oil because they're like, Jesus put it there, and he's coming back any day now.
Is that
actually
an argument?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oil?
God put it in the ground for us to use. It's our world.
How can you be pro-oil and anti-fossil?
That is a good question, but I think that by the time, if you're really sort of drill baby drill, I don't actually think you have a good idea of how that oil actually came to be.
Okay.
The process of how oil is made, no. And besides, technically speaking, most of that are not organic beings, but rather,
No, but it's
like
all from the same
theory.
Process. Like, it's all part of the same...
Well, it takes a certain amount of million years.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's
not... oil, yes.
Yeah, like...
The irony should not be lost on anyone, but of course it is.
Yeah.
And why would it be ironic if it wasn't? If it wasn't like that, then the world would be very different. You're like, oh, I live in a world that makes sense. Maybe there is some parallel universe where that happens. I got to tell you, this ain't this one.
Well, I don't know. I've been hearing a lot about quantum theory.
That there are many possible universes. Can I live in the one where it makes sense, where people are just not complete idiots?
I would imagine that in a hardcore religious person's mind, that is like some kind of twisted Logan's Run parallel Twilight Zone universe, where it's just everybody is cold and unfeeling, you know?
They would probably also be quite frightened by how many of these realities just were, if you went to and you're like, have you heard of Jesus? Who?
Yeah, do what? Like, Jesus, our janitor? What?
My freak.
Because even
out.
In a parallel universe, Hispanics can't get a fair deal.
Well, there are no parallel universes where they're getting a fair deal.
No, not at all. Every parallel universe has Minutemen on the border.
We're still kind of waiting for that parallel universe where Hispanic people finally don't get the short end of the stick.
Yeah, it's pretty awful. The opinions expressed in this podcast are not necessarily the opinions of the hosts.
Well, yeah, that's true. I would say never trust anything that I just told you, especially seeing as how I even with you made a correction. So
yeah.
The Stoics were actually the sophists. But I hope that some people who actually probably went, oh, he got that wrong. I'm like, you're smarty pants. I hope you feel proud.
Well, the thing about... And this is at least something you can say to make yourself feel good.
Good.
The whole nature of the scientific process and critical thinking is the ability to accept being proven wrong.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. And
so
it's such a hard
process. If you're proven wrong, then that's just part of the process. As far as I'm concerned, that just means what you're doing is working.
Well, I got to tell you,
you're getting people to think.
I got to tell you, there is no better teacher than getting something wrong in front of thousands
of
people.
On the internet.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, didn't that happen to that Kony 2012 guy? Not that I want to talk too much about that.
No, I don't. Well, you know what? Here's the truth. I still am trying to figure him out.
Yeah, I didn't. I never watched it.
I know that there's so much about him that I should hate. There really is, but there's just something about the way that he went about doing it that I thought was so genius that I couldn't help but like. A part of me admires it. I can't help it.
I didn't watch it. I don't know anything.
I know
about this Kony guy, but that's the extent of it.
It was also the degree of internet hate. Maybe it's just because you know, as an internet guy, you get that much yourself, and you just want to stick up for people who have that much hate.
Yeah.
The world of unachievers who basically fucking criticize achievers.
Well, that's the one thing that drives me nuts about the internet is just and like. Just the online community as a whole is there's always going to be
trolls.
I don't think it's trolls. I just think it's that weird immunity that people think they have on the internet, which I mean they do, where they can just be.
It seems to be
biggest asshats.
Yeah,
and they don't realize it's like you know what you're typing is like 10 times above the normal amount of vitriol that's you know
acceptable
in a discussion. You know, like there.
Everyone's always 3 seconds away from a Hitler quote.
Exactly.
Or
like, there's not. There are not a lot of panel discussions that end with the word faggot.
Okay. Or communist.
Those are starting though. People are there's a lot because now they're this politics, but now because the Republicans are kind of stuck with Romney, it's all about Obama's communist leanings. It's pretty hilarious.
Well, I guess it's the
socialized
new
socialized medicine. Yeah.
It's like we must fight socialism. Well, I don't see a lot of people trying to get rid of the police or the fire department.
No,
that's socialism.
No. Socialism is when the banks have to pay more. The rich people have to pay equal tax.
Exactly.
Why are you? That's why the are the poor limitation. People pro this? I don't understand.
Well, you know what?
Stop being racist for 5 minutes.
I mean, I hate to quote George Orwell as though he's some kind of prophet of the future. But I gotta say, his whole thing in 1984, don't wait for the proletariat to figure that shit out, seems to always ring true, is that no one is really fighting for the thing where they have the most interest.
Yeah.
Because they're not accustomed to living in a world in which their interests are being expressed. So if you live in a world in which the interests of the very wealthy are put ahead of your own interests, because like let's pretend the mentality is that well if you are hardworking then you're going to receive those rewards and that's the reality and you should punish anyone who's not successful because obviously they're not hard workers. This is an idea that's kind of hard to chase away, like hard to disprove when so many people have decided to accept it uncritically, and the culture itself is meant to promote it. everyone who's rich is like, I will not apologize for being rich, for being successful. And look at Mitt Romney. His success didn't come from him. His father was rich.
Well, wasn't his father like the mayor of Wisconsin?
Well, no, he ran for president against Richard Nixon, which ironically enough, his father was actually against the Vietnam War, which is why he lost the Republican nomination. One of the reasons at least he lost to Nixon. But, you know, you don't run presidential campaigns as a broke ass. And a large reason why Mitt Romney wants to be president is because of his father who didn't make it. It's a very common phenomenon with Republican men. They're failed fathers they want to make up for.
I'm just so glad that Gingrich is still in the race.
You know, he called Mitt Romney and asked him to step down so that Newt Gingrich could really focus on becoming president.
That guy. That guy.
Isn't he amazing?
I don't know how
he's
big,
amazing. He has brass balls, though.
I'm like, I don't know how big his prostate is, but his balls are huge.
I mean, going over to your wife who has cancer, saying, "Okay,
I think we should see other people."
Right. I don't think I actually have that kind of cojones.
That's not cojones. That's just like evil villainy. It's like, you know, it's like. Yeah. So
a
I
lack
have this
of
other
empathy
family.
For your...
I have this other family at Spider Island.
The sad truth about human beings is that it is easy for us to lose connection and lose empathy. And I mean, I don't want to sound anti-rich, but there is one thing that I've noticed about rich people is they tend to lack empathy. And this is a disturbing
trend.
They're
so shielded from everybody else. It starts with the gated communities, man.
Well, maybe not just that. It's just because in French, there's something called la misère des riches, the misery of the rich. And the truth is that rich people are not more happy than poor people when you look at statistics and surveys.
They have a different set of problems.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. Their own set of pressures and that kind of stuff. And they could probably find themselves in their own misery, caught up in that world. And in a sense, that's the problem. I mean, when we joke about white people problem, like my internet's down, all those things kind of contribute to our lack of empathy of why I as a North American male still accept that in today's world, 25,000 children should die every day of starvation. The fact that somehow that is still happening and that I am a part, an ambivalent part of that, demonstrates that there is a bit of an empathy problem that we have going on. And it only increases the more you have money. This is a disturbing trend.
But the alternative to this, and not to sound like a heartless bastard, they should all be destroyed. What I was going to say was it's awful to think this way, but I could if I were to focus on every bad thing that's happening to everybody in the world, and I'm talking 10 times worse than anything I could imagine,
sure,
happening to millions of children, and that I was somehow indirectly responsible for that, I would have to kill myself. Like, I would have to be like, right. There's no way I could take that
absorb it and do anything
with it other than just huddle up and die.
You know what I mean? It's true that I think that would be our reaction if we were sole individuals absorbing that, right?
Yeah.
But you remember how I say a trouble shared is a trouble halved? Imagine we all kind of felt that, but we felt that simultaneously, and we were millions.
Yeah.
If I knew that I wasn't the only one feeling that horror, but if we had felt it all, a million of us simultaneously, I know that that would be the end of that horror, because there's no way that a million people could let that slide.
Right.
But the truth is it's only one or two there, here and there, that feel it. And even when there's someone who has the capability of making more people feel it, I hate to use Kony 2012 as a good example of this, but there is a certain amount of cynicism, merited or not merited, that finds its way there and really undoes the work of what would normally have been an important empathy exercise.
It's because everybody on the internet has Asperger's.
We all do.
Everybody
you know?
Does.
I went
to Met WebEnd MD and I have Asperger's.
I just know that.
I read it. I took a quiz.
I took a five-minute quiz.
I'm still waiting for my iPod 2.
I'm autistic. That's what I know.
Exactly.
According to the internet, I'm not autistic.
Not slamming people with Asperger's or autism, just the whole internet phenom of self-diagnosing bullshit. Oh, my God.
Well, we're all, you know, we all have a very, very extremely broad set of understanding and very narrow when it comes to the scope of that understanding. So we'll be very knowledgeable about a whole bunch of things happening, but have no real way to interpret it because our knowledge is just so shallow. I realize that every day when I fucking record the show and make a claim, where I realize that even the claims that I make are slightly shallow, and I have to go back and say, like, was I correct about what I said?
Yeah, well, this is why I don't think I could ever do a full-on podcast, and I think that's also why the podcasts with me tend to be more humor-based and less fact-based, is just because I hate being wrong in the sense that I don't like to give misinformation. So I would be like, before I make even the simplest, this is why I'm the worst blogger on the planet. I stick to my comic. I wanted to have it a comic and like an LGBT blog, but it's like, I am so paranoid of offending someone, of saying the wrong thing, of giving false information. I'm like, I have no way of knowing if this is 100% accurate. I can't post this.
There's not just that. There's also the fact that when I did that Great and Square interview, one of the things that I wanted to talk to him about, which I didn't end up, is he has a song about the N-word.
I didn't actually know what he got in shit for. I know you talked about him getting in shit for something.
He basically beat the shit out of Brian Sapien of Rational Response Squad.
Physically?
Yeah.
Who's Brian Sapien?
Unless you're really into the scene, you wouldn't know the Rational Response Squad. They were really... In 2006, 2007, they were pretty active. They were one of those, you know, like a bunch of young people that would go around debating creationists.
Oh, were they
like
the? Were they? Was that that shrill woman who debated Ray Comfort and Kirk Cameron?
Well, they were part
guy?
Of the group that did that, I believe.
Oh, okay, yeah, the woman who looked like Abby.
No one knows who that is, guy.
I'm talking. You said this was like the tangential episode.
All right, fine. It was like that girl that we knew. Yeah,
yes.
Back in the day.
Okay, back in the day.
Back in the fucking day. Okay. So. He beat the shit out of, you know, I don't know how bad it was because there were no pictures, but it sounded pretty brutal.
Okay.
So it was like a, anyways, when I did
okay,
the,
so anyways, I didn't realize he had, okay, so.
We did, I did an interview with him and we talked about, there's this one song where he says, it's something about like, don't use the N-word because it's as bad as saying the word nigger and then you should just say, you know, it and so on and so forth. And I wanted to talk to him about it.
Mm-hmm.
But as it turns out, like even during the interview, he was just mentioning, you know, I don't necessarily still believe the lyrics that I've written. They're okay. Part of a different, they're part of a past. You know, you don't, like, and that's true for even the stuff that you write. Like, I've been writing this blog for many years. Yeah. I don't fucking necessarily believe everything I've written in the past.
Or you look back at your articles, I'm like, man, was I ever that stupid?
Yeah. Well, that is the, you know, you realize that the only way to actually grow is to start accepting your own stupidity.
That's true. I mean, you never improve if you don't make mistakes. It's just that With the internet, it's just I don't want to be known for the guy who makes mistakes on the internet.
You have no choice.
I know.
It is the only way to
I'm only,
partake.
I'm only slowly making peace with that on my comic. I always go back to my comics. I'm like, I could have colored that better. I'm like, I'm talking about the coloring on a webcomic?
And it's so funny because so many of those things are unimportant to people. I mean,
they really are. Nobody cares about me. I go back to comics that I've drawn and I'm just like, I completely didn't. There's a big white spot in the background where I didn't fill it in. Nobody has ever once noticed that or mentioned it.
I am notorious for that. People will know that I will just not release things because I'm just like, I don't like the quality. I will destroy drawings. I'll just be like, I'm merciless when it comes to a lot of the shit that I produce. Like,
and I remember back in the day, you were pretty merciless when I was approaching you with drawings. To be fair, I was just starting out.
It's true.
You were pretty merciless.
But you know what? Here's the truth is, I go to an art museum and I criticize Rodin.
Yeah, well,
and Degas, who I joked around saying it's a mess. Get it? Degas French for mess.
I know.
Yeah. Some people don't know that.
I was going to make the Rodin isn't he a Godzilla villain.
Yeah, and plus I really just cannot stress how talentless I think Picasso was.
No,
but all I'm saying is that look, I am cruel on all levels. It was never a personal thing.
How you have a girlfriend? I don't know. Like
Beyonce. I had a cool podcast that helped and a sexy voice that helps. It really does. I think it probably totally
I need to work on my sexy voice.
You know, it's funny. When I was a young man, I used to work on my sexy voice all the time. I would try to get it all to be deeper and stuff, and it
works. Yeah, but I don't know what a sexy voice is to a gay man.
Well, that is a good question.
Because, like, I'm sorry. The gay men that I know who score a lot are really obnoxious sounding.
Yeah, but but here's the thing. They're just out there, and you know men.
Yeah, that's true.
Being out there is half the fucking battle.
Yeah, this is true. If you can get someone to look at you, you're already
You're already like in their house.
And I mean, I have to imagine, like, I mean, I talk to most women and it's always the same thing, is that confidence is such a huge thing. It's difficult to describe, because, you know, the truth of the matter is, you try to get a person to be specific and be like, can you tell me the difference between confidence and arrogance? No one really knows.
You know when it's happened. You know when the line's been crossed, though.
It is so subtle.
The observer can tell when the line has been crossed.
You know what it is? It's when it's unmerited. That's all. If your arrogance is unmerited, like if you say, oh, I'm totally awesome at singing, and then someone hears your voice and it sucks.
No. If you say, I'm totally awesome at singing, okay, well, you maybe sound you arrogant. I think like it's that. More if you're just like, nah, you know what? I'll sing. And then you sing.
That doesn't sound arrogant.
Sounds confident.
What if you were saying, like, if you said, listen, people love my shit. And then at first that would sound really, you know, what a confident piece of shit. And then he went on and he blew you away. How would you feel about that then?
Fair enough. But it would get you anyways.
Like, plus with some singing and shit, it's got to carry some weight.
I don't know. I'm the worst. Like, I'm the worst judge of people, I think.
Do you find attractive other than sort of a person's physique? There's obviously a criteria.
It's intellect.
That's the first thing. They have to be super smart.
Not super smart.
Do you want to date a guy who's smarter than you?
Well, on the same level as me.
But seriously, what if he's smarter though?
I think my ex was smarter than me.
He was very young and inexperienced though.
He was young and inexperienced, but academically, the guy retained information like this.
Ow.
He was teaching himself Hebrew for the fun of it, and he was able to speak Japanese. He taught himself that for the fun of it, like. This is a guy who retained information. Like, I was just like, no. I'm like, this is why I think our relationship lasted as not long, but as long as it did.
As briefly as it did.
Yeah, because it's just like, people can probably tell, like, I have the ability to be serious, but I'm also incredibly immature sometimes. So like, it kind of, and his level of maturity kind of met. We had like a middle ground.
Okay, I understand. Yeah, but so, was his maturity changing? Was it evolving? Like in a sense,
I don't know, but that's neither.
You just like to have fun. You're still a kid at heart. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. But I just think in terms of what I personally find attractive in a man, is not cockiness. I honestly like nerdy geeky guys. Not like the I'm so geeky, I'm gonna play video games and lick the controller and be all sexy. No, but you know, like,
somebody does that.
No, but you know how like the sexy chick gamers are.
Oh, right.
That it's like, oh, I play video games in my underwear, blah blah blah. You know, like, no, not like that. Just someone.
Now I'm
wants
thinking about that. Thank you.
You're welcome. And just think, if you had those Google glasses,
a gay man put that thought in my brain. It's amazing.
I have a power. It's a superpower. Now you're playing with superpower. But anyways, I digress. The point I was making is,
Your attractiveness, man, is sort of like you said, geeky. But
I'm attracted to men that I could be friends with first. Do you know what I mean?
I understand. Yeah, but I mean, what I was asking is there a kind of, would you feel a little bit out of place if somebody was visibly more brilliant than you?
Probably.
Yeah.
But the wonderful thing about, actually, one of my very first people that I dated is brilliantly smarter than me. But the thing is I'm able to comfort myself in the sense that I know a fair bit about a lot of different things. So even if I'm not a specialist in one field, I can always take comfort in knowing that there's at least some things I'll know more about him, than him.
Right.
It's like, yeah, you know more than me about astrophysics, but I know more than you about cartoons. This is why and Neil deGrasse Tyson would make an excellent couple.
Did you see pictures of his younger self?
I did see. He is a
holy
hot man.
Schmoly, eh? When he had like those, you love arms too. He had some fucking big arms.
I love arms, black dudes, and smart people. So yeah.
Do you like the froze though? I got to tell you, if
I don't
I was
like,
gay, I would
I don't,
not dig
I don't,
the fro.
I don't dig the fro so much, but you can work around that. I just like, but no, Neil deGrasse Tyson is like awesome guy.
I hope one day to have him on the show, but I don't think he's going to come on because he never really publicly identifies himself as an atheist.
He would be fun to have on the show just because I would want to shake his hand and be like, why can't you teach in every classroom? Well, you know? And I don't mean that on the physically he's a cool guy and I'm attracted to him.
I gotta say,
that guy is so,
He's not as cool as Brian Cox. I'm sorry.
Which
Brian
Cox?
He's the British guy who was in a band called, I think it was
Dream. Oh, that guy. No, I don't like him as much.
He is awesome. His Wonders of the Solar System and Wonders of the Universe, like it beats the Pluto Files felt like it was Bill Nye the Science Guy level of geek.
I like Bill Nye.
And
I think Bill Nye is
Wonders
cool.
of the Universe is Carl Sagan level. So
yeah, but
Brian Cox is more of a Carl Sagan than fucking Neil deGrasse Tyson.
I'm more engaged by Neil deGrasse Tyson than
that's because I think you like
Carl
the nerdy
Sagan.
Thing. I think the fact that he's British rock star sexy.
Okay.
He's my man crush.
Okay.
It's like him and Steven Pinker.
But he has like no neck.
He does look kind of like an old like a hippie woman. I'll be honest with his hair too.
Yeah.
He reminds me of I think he would actually look better as a weird hippie woman than he would as
they
a man.
They should totally have a what is her name? Ma the cross dressing British lady.
RuPaul?
Oh, yes, no, she's
oh
she's
God, no, I know who you're talking
something
about.
Something Edith or
oh,
Ma
she's
something.
Had that horrible act there.
He could be like the science version of her.
Ew, what was her name? Hopefully, maybe I can find it in the notes.
I'll remember it.
It was just not funny.
I
guess it was still when people were fascinated by it. Look, it's clearly
a man
in a
dress. I'm not talking about Eddie Izzard. I'm talking about the one before that.
I know who you're talking about. I just don't know her name.
Dame Edna.
Oh my God, I didn't actually think we'd do it. Dame Edna.
There we go.
The least funny
drag
British
queen
comedian
in the world.
Ever. Let's just say that drag queen is a very, very generous term.
No. There was plenty of drag.
Ouch. We're just so catty, though. That's mean.
We are.
If you can't pull off drag and we make fun of you, are we being horrible? See, that's...
What? Dragophobic? If you're not good at your job, you're not good at your job.
That's fair. I just don't know what degree I can... really denigrate drag if it is a real phenomenon where you have to do it in order to feel kind of
yeah
normal.
But if you have to do it in order to feel normal, the odds are you're probably not getting paid millions of dollars to do it for
and you're,
rich
you're,
white people.
Yeah, that is true. You're
I
not
mean,
forcing
sure
your horrible comedy on people.
Exactly. I'm sorry if you're not funny, I'm not gonna laugh at your jokes. And if you're not an entertaining drag queen, I'm not gonna find you an entertaining. RuPaul's an entertaining drag queen. I find him very entertaining. I find there's a lot of entertaining drag queens that pull it off.
I actually saw what he looked like as a man in the movie But I'm a Cheerleader.
Yeah, but he was overweight in that. He doesn't look that bad in real life.
Well, I was going to say he kind of reminded me of who's that guy that has that horrible talk show?
Oh God, I know who you're talking about.
He's
Montel.
He looks a bit like Montel Williams, doesn't he?
He does. He's like a gay Montel. He's like Montel Williams with plaid pants.
You know what? I'm just thinking Montel Williams would make a really attractive woman, I think, if he totally dragged
know.
It up.
I don't
You don't
know.
Think so?
Well, if he looks like RuPaul, then I guess so. Because RuPaul can pull it off.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well,
80s hot.
The thing is, RuPaul is kind of the cat's out of the bag with that one. So like everybody knows what he looks like as a guy. So I don't think... in terms of looking like a woman, you're going to be able to extrapolate. But
it definitely won't
the,
be like the Miss Canada universe.
Or the... Well, she's transgender.
Is she... what's the identity? Does she identify herself as male or female? I'm really
confused. Well, you'd have to ask her, but if she's transgender... and I hope I get this right. If she's transgender, then she identifies as a
self
woman.
As a woman, right.
Yeah.
Okay,
but
she's
if
not
you're
transvestite, where
yeah,
you identify
yourself.
Yeah,
if you're transvestite, you're just like dressing in the opposite sex's clothing. I believe it's just the opposite sex. It's not exactly like it's kind of dumb though, because wouldn't that mean that any woman who wears jeans and a t-shirt is a transvestite?
Do we have to have strict guy girl clothing? I don't know. Maybe
well, we don't.
Be...
I don't necessarily think we need to, but like that's by definition. If there's someone who wears women's clothes, then there's a definition of what's women's clothes and what's not, right?
Well, if we don't, I think we don't have the. I think the issue that some people are having is that we're no longer having clear gender identity lines that some people feel are necessary.
Yeah, but you don't. I think this is like gender roles and gender, like the concept of genders, like gender fluidity and all that hullabaloo. Like, I don't think it matters anymore. I think people should be able to be who they are. I think the individual is the individual. There are elements that I don't quite yet understand in terms of the emotional level. I don't think I can any more understand what a transgender person goes through than a straight person can understand what a gay person goes through, in the sense that they can get it on paper, but to grasp the emotional what's the word I'm looking like? The intensity of it. Like you can't
the emotional
you
gravitas.
Can, exactly. You can you get an idea, like this is the concept, but you can't really know how it feels because it's a completely different concept.
So much of it is experiential and not sort of like just raw knowledge. I can try to explain it to you like I can try to explain what is the pain of childbirth.
Yeah. It's like it's like pulling out a tooth. Nah, not quite. It's like a tooth is this big.
It's not the size of a watermelon.
Exactly. No, it's kind of the same thing. So I mean when it comes to terms of gender identity and stuff, I'm like, you know what? You know best. You are in control of who you think you are, who you are, what you are, what you want to be, whatever. Like you are in control of that, and I'm whatever you want me to refer to you as, I will refer to you as that and offer my support in any way. Because you are the only gauge of who you are at the end of the day.
Well, I think that maybe the problem we find ourselves is going back to the whole myth-making thing that I was talking about before, right? Where where people used to craft the identities of sexes, and even if it didn't necessarily seem to ring true to you, I think for some people, they found at least some satisfaction of a lack of uncertainty. Or even in a sense, the fact that in today's society, one of the things that we find rather choking is choice. Ironically enough, where we find ourselves less happy when we have more choice because we don't know what to do with that choice.
Well, it's that whole, you were calling it the illusion of choice, that whole thing. It's like if you're giving someone a menu, it's best to just read one or two things off of it instead of the whole thing, because otherwise they're just never going to decide.
It really is. We're not creatures that make good choices if we're given too much. We tend to make good choices if we're given just a few variables. But the truth is that doesn't seem to be the way that society is evolving, and understanding the human condition seems to be more understanding a range of behavior rather than understanding like this one behavior that has to be pushed or promoted or whatever.
And applied to everybody.
But at the same time, we have to understand that I don't know if we've done a great job of myth-making ourselves. Like, what is this great future that we envisage? And, you know, even in the sense that we're saying, like, you know best, I still think that we should have maybe not one vision of what people should be like. Perhaps there's several that you can choose from. But maybe a big part of the problem is that now we're not actually able to craft powerful identities. We leave people almost without one, left to their own devices and say, good luck trying to create an identity.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be surprised if all of a sudden we might lose a few people who go towards even woo-woo merely for the ability to identify as something, for them to say, I am this, and I can find pleasure from that identity.
Well, the more niches there are, the harder it is for you to really identify with the right one, because there's just too many. And like that's one of the things that I agree with you fully on is the more options there are for you to fit into, like, the more you're going to find, like, well, this one could fit better, I think. Or what about this one? Or what about this one, you know? But I'm kind of lucky in the sense, at least I think, is that at my age, I don't search for groups of, necessarily like a club, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like in high school.
No, I don't need people to believe everything I do. Like, that's not a predicated, aspect of my life. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I will admit that I probably have a greater intolerance for anyone who has beliefs that I would say are what I would characterize as not well thought out. And everybody knows this about me. I don't tend to have a lot of tolerance.
You've had a lot of disastrous dates as a result of this, haven't you?
I have.
I remember hearing about somebody who's like, I can't date her. She's hot, but she believes in tarot cards.
Oh, my God. She asked me what sign I was, and I could not stop
laughing,
spewing venom.
Yeah, I've tried to mellow it. I think that's why I left the atheist scene for a while. I was finding that it was making me a little more bitter than I'd like.
Well, you know what? The one thing I have mentioned, and I hope that everybody kind of gets that feeling, especially on Pod Stravaganza, is the idea that I think that my role now is to try to get people to be more aware of different elements of what I would call atheist culture. Mm-hmm. I would hate to think that we only are the equivalent of the Jesus junk circle, where we're not able to tell the difference between good art and bad art, but nevertheless, I think there is an artistic movement, even in non-belief, that we have to recognize and promote.
It's more the, for me, it was the
the atheist, for lack of a better phrase, evangelizing, that drove me up a wall. Like the bus ads and stuff, I'm just like, come on.
Well, you know, you're on board with Ryan
with
when
Ryan,
it comes
yeah,
to
when I was listening to that specific podcast.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what I was saying. I was like, I'm with Ryan on this, and I'm like, come on.
And it's funny because Ryan actually got flack, which I mentioned on part one of Podstravaganza,
oh,
where
yeah?
I was saying, look, if we can't convince a guy like Ryan,
yeah.
then you know, it doesn't matter what we do, because in a sense, Ryan incorporates so many of like the atheist experience. Like, how many people actually really showed up at Reason Rally compared to how many people that are actually non-believers? I mean, it's a
right.
fraction.
And yeah.
and that fractions are people like me, the ones that are just like, I'm not taking, you know, religion sitting down. I'm going to fight
right.
this shit.
Well, I think the thing is, and then it's funny that we're getting to like the meat of the subject an hour and a half in. But
no, it's not even an hour and a half in. This is technically almost 3 hours.
Is
it? Podstravaganza.
Wow.
That's this is a giant show, but I have no choice, man. I really fucked the pooch in terms
right.
of my
well,
schedule.
Well, it's all good. I'm just saying, like, it's the what I was gonna make is just it's that whole let's not be the whole don't be a dick thing. Remember way back, bad astronomy guy,
yeah.
with his don't be a dick thing, and I'm like, I at first kind of agreed with you on that sense, and it's like. But we kind of have to push back a little bit. But at the same time, I'm thinking a lot of the stuff that the atheist community has done over the last little bit has made me kind of embarrassed to be a part of it. And that's the kind of shitty thing about it. It's just like the particularly like let's look at like nativity scenes. Okay, like that whole fight to be on the to take out the nativity scene and blah, blah, and have like the atheist whatever exhibit, like I don't even know what they would have put there. What, a big nothing, a molecule, what? Anyways, the point I'm making is it's like that doesn't necessarily unfortunately in the public's eye, that doesn't make you look like you're fighting for a cause. That just makes you look like a killjoy asshole. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, no, they can't have Christmas because I don't believe in it. Ah! And it's because it's on a public ground. It's like, I get the Ten Commandments. You know, because those are like rules, and we're in a courthouse, and not everybody. You know what I mean? But like, when you're picking fights, like I feel. I guess the best way to put it is, I don't know. I don't have the answer to it, but
I don't know which fight you should pick.
I don't
right?
exactly. It's like I think the atheist movement on a whole is probably not picking the best battles.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I mean, CFI Canada just talked about the fact that they were participating in a class action lawsuit against a couple pharmacies. I forget which ones. But the intended purpose was to bring to light the fact that many of these homeopathic medicines
right.
make claims that are not substantiated by science,
right.
and it's time to remove them.
Right.
You know, essentially expensive sugar pills.
Yeah.
And you know this style of quote unquote evangelizing of I actually support because
I support that one because
yeah.
that's what we're talking about. We're talking about health. We're talking about something that's potentially dangerous in terms of like immediate effect, but. Making a big stink about, like, you know, Jesus, of a nativity scene in a school. I don't know. I don't personally see the harm in it.
Look, I think you have to.
Yeah, I have a very loud. We're right at street level.
You
so.
Have to follow. I think the trend of where people are in their lives. Like, I've been mentioning this a few shows, saying,
mm-hmm.
well, I think we're kind of. I don't want to say we're done with being negative or being sort of bitter. But what we actually have to try to embrace now is hope. Because
mm-hmm.
the thing about Kony 2012, even going back to that, and what made
yeah.
it successful is because it tapped into what I think, you know, something that people are ready to experience, which is not being depressed about an uncertain future, but rather being hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes back to the very thing that I was saying about myth-making, is that
mm-hmm.
even in our own myths, everything we just keep talking about, I'm like, do we have our own version of it gets better? Or just sort of like we get bitter? Is that sort
we
of our message?
Bitter. I like that.
And
we
this is coming
bitter.
From me here. This
yeah.
is coming from the most bitter fucking atheist that I know, except for maybe the angry atheist, who's way too bitter. But, you know, with that said, I'm like, I've thought long and hard about my involvement, what's important,
mm-hmm.
and how things are changing. And I'm like, I myself still must change. I mean, I'm not going to stop ranting when a rant is worthy. Like, if I find out that the Catholic Church is still fighting against contraception in the third world,
yeah.
which leads to fucking human misery... I'm
that,
gonna say
but
shit.
But these are fights that I think are worth fighting. These are the things that it's. I think when you're fighting, let's say, the more traditional aspect, like celebratory aspects of a religion, that's when it's kind of you come off looking bad. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I'm on board with the let's fight against the Vatican, let's fight against you know, foo-foo medicine, all of that. I'm on 100% on board. I'm just saying, putting up billboards during Christmas that say it didn't happen, you guys, is kind of like, I understand that is our feeling, but you're not going to convince anyone with that. The only thing that you're really convincing anybody of is that you're kind of like you're the equivalent of like an internet troll at this point. You know what I mean?
Well, it's also the reason why I was trying to tell everybody that we need to focus on being positive is that I think that part of what Good Atheist fills is actually the bitter portion, because I've always been quite good at the bitter vitriol.
Yeah.
But I'm not an organization that is trying to reach out.
Right.
I'm just a dude trying to make some fucking money by talking.
One of those unhurtable cats.
I am an unhurtable cat. But at the same time, I'm like, look, the people that are deep into it, like, remember that story about that, you know, that atheist guy that converted after some religious people showed him compassion?
I can piece it together.
This made the rounds. And of course, you know, you always chuckle at being like, oh, wow, we lost. What a great guy lost.
What a terrible loss. Oh, no.
And it took him just a little bit of compassion to suddenly say, I give up on reality. But, I mean, you can't ignore the fact that the one thing that we haven't been really good at is really selling the story. Actually, the Friendly Atheist mentioned this in one of his posts, that he was on a TV show, and he was explaining his non-belief, and somebody else explained how she became a believer, and he admitted saying, like, my story was not compelling. It didn't touch anyone emotionally.
Yeah.
And I've been saying this a lot, saying, like, listen, guys, rationalism will not save us. And what I liked about the Reason Rally is that we finally, for once, became irrational about rationality.
Mm-hmm.
Just only because rationality is not emotion. It creates no emotional connection, and it doesn't make a lasting testimony for anybody who just talks about, I slowly came to be reasonable and understand that I was living through a delusion. But you can turn that around and say, I used to be confused and angry, and often sort of like, I didn't know what was going on. I thought that maybe I interpreted things incorrectly, but it was once I let go of these artificial feelings of guilt, these artificial feelings of remorse, that I really started to evolve and change as a human being. That sounds like something a person could identify with, isn't it?
It does. It's just that it tends to... It doesn't tend to happen like that. That's the problem. Like, yeah. I mean, look at just a couple podcasts ago. It's like coping with death as an atheist. Like, you know, like there's no God, there's no afterlife. It's all, you know, once it's done, it's done. It's like you're not gonna win anybody over with that. And that's, I don't have the answer. And I feel like a bit of a critic in that sense, where I just, you know, I'm just judging them without bringing anything to the table, and that's kind of a sucky thing to do, but it's like...
Well, we had a conversation about how the internet does this in general, and you're
part of that. Yeah, there we go.
You're part of that systemic pressure of just being a hater on the internet.
There we go.
Tu es un hater.
Hater. Anyways, the point I was trying to make is just that I don't know how you can... It's a hard sell, and it's... I don't think you can't sell it. It's a hard sell that becomes even more difficult when we add the extra layer of really kind of bad decisions the atheist community makes. You know what I mean? Like, we're not the free thinking society. We put bus ads up and ruin people's day.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny that you mentioned this. I remember there's this one guy who sent me a video, the antagonist atheist or whatever. Put me a video and he's like, can you promote this? And I said, listen, dude, I've got so many negative responses from your videos that no one wants to see them on my site. It's like, maybe there are people that enjoy that, but they're not my fan base, because I just don't think that style of humor is really all that funny anymore. Like,
I'm assuming it was just all attack?
Well, that's kind of his shtick. Or there's just some general, we're just goofing around being stupid or that kind of stuff. And I'm like, oh, man, I feel like the jackass days are behind us now. Like,
For an organization that prides itself on intellectual clarity... You know what I mean? Like,
but we're not, look, even as a movement, we're not very wise. I know the people inside this group, and we don't display the most wisdom. And, you know, a lot of the criticisms that we get from fellow atheists that are just not into the movement are things that we've ignored for way too long, mm-hmm. as though it didn't matter. Be like, oh, well, you're just being assholes. Well, you know what? There used to be lots of movements back in the day where, like, Robert Ingersoll is a good example, where he used to go around fucking talk about, you know, free thought and have huge audiences that were showing up because people had an excited new vision of the world. And they were like, yeah, science is putting putting all these old superstitions to the side. And there was a real impetus and excitement from people. And the fact that we haven't been able to do this Well, is a testament to our partial failure, like a serious failure on our part.
Well, the problem is the I think the reason for that is that our entertainers are university professors. Do you know what I mean? Like,
well, that's exactly. Like, they're not though. The truth is there's so many artists that could easily identify themselves as that. If only there was a scene that didn't. Like, that didn't feel as though you had to compete against university professors giving their opinions of things that you're already aware of as a layman now. We've all been educated by
them. We've all watched TED Talks. We know.
I think we're pretty much done with those kinds of things. Yeah. I don't know. Does anyone feel like going to another atheist convention to hear the same old speeches now?
Maybe not for the speeches, but for the community, probably. Well, I got to admit that I was like, I was listening to, and I probably shouldn't bump another
podcast. No, do it. But, he'll be on the show soon anyways.
Is he?
Yeah, well, he's going to be talking about his charity, so maybe in like 2 or 3 weeks we're going to have the guy from Thinking Atheist on the show.
You need to tell him I say hi, because I'm a big fan, actually.
Okay, well, I'll tell him you say hi, then.
Not as big a fan of his podcast as this one, but...
It's such a liar. Admit it. You like better his podcast than my podcast, don't you? Say it.
No. Here's the thing, okay, that everybody needs to know.
Yeah.
I grew up... My college days, I was, for some dumb reason, I was really into talk radio. And listening to that guy...
He's a very talk radio.
He sounds like... Because he's got people calling in and... It sounds like I'm listening to a talk radio show that I just really am into.
Well, he's got a very enjoyable voice,
too. That's the thing. So it's like, I listen to it. I'm like, this is just like it used to be. Like, when I was, you know, back in the day. So I get this weird nostalgic vibe as well. Mm-hmm, I mean, I like the podcast that we're doing. But it's a different animal. This is more presentation and there's less interaction.
Like, well, that's true. And plus, like... Well, maybe not on this show, but I usually keep a pretty fucking furious pace of just the things that just come out of my mouth.
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably why I'm not on that.
it's a bit like a machine gun.
Yeah, exactly. Feel like a machine gun. I'm more of the shotgun. It's just bursts that go everywhere, and they don't know.
What are you talking about exactly?
I don't know.
I feel like there's a sexual innuendo here.
No, I was just playing a lot of Alpha Protocol and.
Oh yeah, video game talk. Everyone's gonna get that 5% of the show, maybe. Well,
you think really?
Okay, no.
When we had that gaming podcast, I think there was a lot of overlap.
That is true. It wasn't consistent enough to know how much overlap there was, though.
Yeah. Needed to find an easier way to do that. Anyway, I digress. The point I was making is...
The Thinking Atheist.
The Thinking Atheist was talking about his experience at the Reason Rally and how it wasn't so much the performances and stuff. It was really the communal... feeling of that, and I'm like, I would like that sense of belonging just in general is something that I don't have in my life too much. Even in terms of just friends and family that are nearby,
or even just like, well, in terms of your sexuality, you don't really actually identify with a lot of gay men.
No, exactly. Like, there's no specific organization that I can not necessarily identify as, but just visit and find like-minded individuals at. So I was listening to this, I'm like, I would go to one of these, not for the presentations and not for the same topics that we've heard on YouTube a million times, or just to meet people that that you have that similarity with. And I think that's something that's necessary. I think the atheist movement has probably also been a little too sterile in that regard.
Definitely not. Like, well, one of the things when I went to the Graydon Square after party by Black Nonbelievers, the one thing that I said is, like, I would have come down just for that, because it was a great show. There was so much atmosphere, and everybody there just seemed so happy. And I'm like, that's what we need. That's what sort of like, for me, a group of non-believers coming together should sound like. Because, you know, especially with Graydon Square's lyrics, but also with MC Brooke, who hopefully I'll be solving the technical issues with that for next week's fucking podcast. Such a nightmare. But anyways, these guys, you know, singing about skepticism, about non-belief, and really about the consequences of those things. This is actually part of our culture, because as much like our culture, in a sense, is really defined as a counterculture movement. And we have to accept that. The fact that, we are non-belief, but the very consequences of non-belief imply a counterculture. So, I mean, we didn't choose it. We would love to, for it to be all kinds of private. And if everyone's belief just remained private, I think that the majority of us would be cool with that. Because we would just assume that, you know, life could just go as is.
Yeah, you but don't that have that badge that says, these are topics that are off limits.
And this is always the conflation of, you know, how much should I be for atheism? How should I push it? Is a delicate balance of realizing, well, how much is the outside pushing back? Mm-hmm. You know, when I mentioned last show in Tennessee, where they now have the law that protects people, protects teachers trying to introduce creationism into school boards, I mean, into classrooms, and where the school boards can do nothing because the law now protects them. You're like,
yeah.
I feel all the time like we are losing some of these
battles.
That's
the special treatment I'm talking about, that I think those are the fights we should be picking.
Absolutely.
You know?
And I think that a lot of the times, I think you're right, where we don't have a lot of focus and knowing where to go, but we're a young movement, we don't have a lot of wisdom, and I don't think we know how to play this game right.
And I think another drawback is that it's a movement that is almost entirely an online thing. I find, anyway, that it's mostly just, it's the internet is the hub of the atheist conference room is the internet, and the internet is prone to levels of vitriol and levels of anger that are just kind of above and beyond what you would normally expect.
Or levels of social ineptness that's just sort of like historic.
Exactly. And that's I think, like, that's one of the other drawbacks, is we end up getting lumped in with, like, people who just, you know, just swarm, you know, flood Christian chat rooms and start putting goatsy pictures up. You know, like, that's part of our image. Do you know what I mean?
Well, it's definitely, I think that even Christians who themselves, like, let's say the blog American Jesus,
okay,
right? This is a believer who's himself trying to constantly oust fundamentalists because he has something, you know, that he believes he has something to lose. And you know, like, I wouldn't say that our fundamentalists are on the same degree. But I think there should be a part of us that would be able to say, that sucked, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
That sucked. And we're really afraid as a small group to start saying, hey, your shit sucks, because we don't want to be negative.
Everybody the thing is we all want to be the most open-minded one of the group. Do you know what I mean?
Well, maybe not me. I've given up on this whole, like, open-mindedness.
Well, I'm as open-minded as I can get, really, on these subjects, I think. I mean, I don't really, I think it's okay to be bigoted against assholes.
I think it's right to hate assholes. You know, the only way that I know that I'm probably doing something that's right,
uh-huh,
is that I'm constantly in a situation where I'm reading shit I hate reading. Like, you know, when I'm reading some Christian guy's post about how you can't have, like, that if Christianity disappeared, suddenly slavery would reappear, that I have to read that man's article.
Yeah. And, well, it's like when painful. I try to blog, like, do the lesbian gay stuff, like, just reading that stuff and just like, oh my God, are you serious? Like,
but that's how you know you're actually doing the right thing, because
people avoid... It makes you nice and angry.
Well, no, it's not that. It's that so many times people avoid hearing ideas or theories that don't support their own, and you have to kind of wonder if maybe the reason that you don't is because you're afraid of the other side. Well, like the same study that found that, you know, if you were a homophobe, odds are you're a closeted homosexual. Like, does that surprise anybody when I say that? That you would have an obsession with gays, maybe because you yourself are just a closeted gay.
That's the thing, is, like, if you're constantly fantasizing about dudes having sex and it's ruining your sex life, probably not on the imaginary dudes having sex's problem.
Maybe that's not the problem.
It's not their problem. But, yeah, no, I don't have an answer for the atheist community, unfortunately. I just think we need to tone back some of the hate, you know?
Or get, you know, my whole thing is,
at least
I would love...
structure it.
I would love... Well, yeah, no, definitely. Structure it when it makes sense. Like, part one of the pod extravaganza that we had was where we talk about this young student in the U.S. that's refusing to go to a graduation ceremony because it's being held in Eddie Long's church. And you know what? That is a worthwhile fight, because Eddie Long is a piece of shit. A big piece of fucking shit. A homophobic gay dude. Again, sort of leading back to that same study.
Notice the complete lack of gasps following that sentence.
Seriously, and saying, like, this, the fact that this is being, you know, my graduating ceremony for my high school is being held there, I'm against that. That, I think, are, you know, like, those are the big fights, and the ones that do get the right kind of attention.
Mm-hmm.
Even though some people might say, well, I don't really care about the degree of activism. That's probably where a lot of people are right on that fence. And I would say that in the terms of how it's regarded in the mainstream, it's very difficult for even the mainstream to make someone's claim like that seemed to pass muster. Like, a lot of people should have a problem with Eddie Long's fucking ministry and holding a school graduation there. Yeah, there should be plenty of fucking people.
About rage, but there's not.
There isn't, because, you know, in a sense, the same tragedy the same beautiful thing that has allowed us to express ourselves has resulted in the fact that evangelicals and Catholics are now united. It's pretty fucked up. In their intense hatred of both secularization and homosexuality, where previously these groups that would have been killing each other for hundreds of years are now pals because of their shared hatred.
This is like the Joes and Cobra teaming up to fight Serpentor.
What was the result of that, by the way? Did the Cobras like try to betray the?
I don't remember. Joes? I just know that there's always an episode where the good guys have to unite against the common foe. Like, you know, it's like we hate each other, but we'll put our differences aside because the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
And what is the one thing that you always learn from those, though? That the guys who teamed up will always fucking betray you right at the end.
Or they go their separate. I don't remember. They don't go their separate.
Whereas they're bad guys, they will betray you.
Poorly and in a comedic way, because they're a Cobra, the worst villain organization on the planet.
They never seem to be able to get anything done.
They're the most, and they never try anything twice.
If it failed once, it's like, forever.
You know what? This plan to steal nukes didn't work. I guess stealing nukes is off the table. I'm like, no, you can do it again.
To be fair, they have a gigantic list of things they're going through. So maybe they'll revisit when they go through their list of 300 villainies.
Hijack the rockets on top of the rocket themed burger joint and turn them into real rockets.
That
was an episode.
You're shitting me.
I'm not shitting you. That was an episode. They were turning them into real missiles, and they were gonna.
Oh,
I'm like,
G.I.
you wonder
Joe.
Why this plan will fail.
Oh my goodness! You know, it's almost as ridiculous as the what was that movie with Billy Bob Thornton where he was like the cowboy astronaut? Stupidest fucking movie ever.
I have no idea. I tend
cowboy
to avoid...
builds his own fucking space.
That wasn't space cowboy, was it?
No. Space Cowboys was something
like
different.
Like the old people going into space.
Yeah, that was like
or is that
geriatric
what you call it?
Space
Jettison.
Cowboys. It's like, hey, look at all these actors that used to be in movies and were sex symbols like 30 years ago.
But wasn't Clint Eastwood in there?
Yeah.
Clint Eastwood's still kind of sexy for an old man. For an old man, he aged well.
Fine.
But
you know how sexy he was as a young man? Have you ever watched A Fistful of Dollars?
No.
He's deadly sexy in that.
Yeah, no, I don't doubt that.
So, of course, he's going to be sexy when he's older. Well, not of course.
Well, not as sexy. I mean, he's as sexy as a grape can be, I guess.
Yeah. Hey, we're going back to that lemon party thing here. Yeah. Maybe we
full
should
circle.
End it there.
Let's end on the lemon party with Clint Eastwood.
Well, you know what?
Well, we had a good half hour of serious conversation anyway.
Yeah, but at least half hour. But, you know, in any pod extravaganza, you're going to have... Yeah, this is the first, but you're going to have lots of silliness.
You are really keen on that branding.
I believe in strong branding. And you know what? If you enjoyed it and if you thought to yourself that a three-hour podcast was something that was worthwhile.
This works. I think this can work well in segments, though, to be honest.
Once in a while?
No. Like a three-hour podcast, you know, like an hour on the way to work, an hour back home, and then an hour while you do
Well, the good thing about the pod extravaganza is it will clearly be delineated.
It's parts.
Nice...
Yeah, it's got clear parts to it.
Exactly. Yeah. So you have a shitload of shows. I essentially just bundled it all into one to prevent having to do my work twice. Does
there
that make
go.
Any sense?
Sure.
And it's just going to be listened to anyways.
And it's free stuff. I mean,
and it's free, yeah, exactly. You know? Who doesn't want something fucking free? So enjoy the free stuff. And with that in mind, before we go, I'd like to remind everybody that, yes, it's true that many things are free, but that paying for shit is the only way that I can actually keep doing what I'm doing, because this is my job, folks. So I would appreciate you supporting me. Please do that. And just go to the membership page, become a member. You can either become a member at $20 or $5 a month, which is, hint, hint, the better one. Helps out way more. And besides, if you get the $5 a month one, you're automatically going to get the ebook once it comes out. At least if you get it long enough, like you need to be on a hardcore member for a few months. Yeah, there is a bit of a trial. You just don't buy it once and get a free ebook.
You also don't finish a book in a month.
You don't. Trying, but I don't think that's
gonna happen. I don't think that's a realistic goal.
Well, a really shitty book, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I can write fanfic in a month.
Did you know what my book was about? Oh no.
Oh my god, it's Osama bin Laden Jesus / fiction.
Shit, you're reading my mind. You're blowing me away here.
I still have access to your Google Docs.
That is true. Yeah, you get to see how horrible my prose is. Okay, well, with that, my name is Jacob Forte.
I don't even know who the hell I am.
Have a good atheist day, everybody.